about.
Hi ho, Kermit the Frog here, and this is a mystery box. You see, if anybody can guess from the clues I give what is in this box, then they can keep what is in the box.
Is it cookie?
No, it is not a cookie.
Bye-bye.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Now. Hi, guys. I like to say hi to everyone in the United States of America right now. Hi, everyone in the United States of America. How are you doing? I'm doing good so far.
Our feature presentation.
Aw, that's nice, Frankie. Thank you. Hope you're doing well in Nova Scotia as well. Hi, kids.
That was quite the tune you played.
Oh, pizza, pizza. Da, 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 da. Yeah, it is one of those songs that you hear and is entertaining and annoying all at the same time.
Yeah, good time.
I saw you bobbing your head a little bit.
I was.
Hey, welcome into another Kevin and Bean Show, this time for a Tuesday, the 22nd of September. I have many thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts stored up from the night.
Well, share them.
Okay. First of all, how does a fly get into the studio at K-Rock when we are behind, I don't know, you got to go through literally three or four doors to get to the inner sanctum that is K-Rock? There's no windows. How does a fly get all the way in there?
I've got a guess.
Go ahead, Chip, because I'd like to hear it.
Oh. I was thinking Mugs, too.
Did it travel on Mugs, like in his hair or somewhere?
Think about it.
Ooh.
Mugs is very Pigpen-like, if you recall the old Peanuts comic strip. He is very much like Pigpen. In other words, there is a cloud of dust around him with probably things jumping on and off his head.
Yeah.
So Mugs is a great guess.
Great guess. It's wreaking havoc in here. It really is.
But here's what's surprising to me, and I don't know much about flies, is that Cat Corbett was complaining about this, I assume, same fly yesterday. Like, this guy is in it for the long haul.
Yeah. He is a sword. Yeah, he flew by with a sword, so he's not joking around. It's ridiculous.
I mean, he has moved in to stay. He is not just passing by.
No, he's in it.
Well, I actually feel good today. I went to bed at 6:45 last night.
Wow. How long does it usually take you to readjust after a trip across the ocean?
I think it varies. I felt like I had no jet lag problems at all. I arrived home Friday night from Europe. Saturday morning, I was up at 6 a.m., which is pretty normal for me on the weekend, and I felt fine. Sunday, I woke up in the 3 o'clock hour. And couldn't get back to sleep. And that was what killed me. I was miserable all day long on Sunday. Couldn't sleep and felt miserable staying awake. Had to stay up late Sunday night because of cutting up all the tape from the Emmys.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday I felt like I was fighting my way back, but I pooped out in the afternoon and that was it. So now I think I'm back. But man, is there anything sweeter than going to bed like super early?
Well, I think a few things.
I can't think of anything.
Okay.
When you crawl in bed and it's 6:45, though, you go, winner.
You know right? How to party, Bean.
I do.
But how light is it up there at that time?
Oh, I mean, it's full daylight. But still, I'm full tired, so I was fine with it.
Do you wear a mask? Take me through Bean sleep.
No.
What do you wear?
No. You know, just PJs, like a human. But... I was put the new Ryan Adams album on, listened to a little bit of that. I think I got about probably 2.5 songs in. I was out. I was gone.
And you slept right through the night?
Right through the night. Lucky. Woke up this morning at around 3:45, I think. So I'm just saying I'm energized, I'm tanned, I'm rested, I'm ready.
You're tanned. That's good. Not sure how that happened in there, but I appreciate it.
Well, I told you it was daylight out when I went to bed. I got the door open. Boom. It's nothing but sun. Just blew. I went to bed pale, woke up tan.
That nice eggshell tan he's got.
Some magical sleep you had.
So what I'm saying is today is going to be dynamic, and it's going to be exciting, and we're going to get S done, is what I'm saying. No messing around today. All right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's with me?
Okay. Sure.
All right. Let's talk about today's Older Kevin to Beat show.
I just hope this isn't all too good to be true.
I don't think it is. I think we're going to be fine today. Brand new round of Beer Mug interviews. He went to something called the Streamy Awards. I don't know much about it, except it is it's where they hand out awards for people who do amazing things online, I guess. I know that my friend Weird Al won one, so it's a legitimate award. And Beer Mug talked to lots of people, including Sir Mix-a-Lot. So we'll be hearing some of those interviews on this morning's Kevin and Bean Show. Also very excited about this. I hope everybody had a chance to watch Gotham last night. It is returned for its second season. Our friend Ben McKenzie is going to be joining us at 7 o'clock this morning. He plays Jim Gordon on the show. He's great. What a nice young man he is.
A nice young man, and I have loved him since his Ryan and Chino days back in the OC.
Yeah.
Oh, such a good guy.
Hell yeah. It's going to take everything in me to not say, welcome to the K-Rock, bitch, when he walks in today. Believe me, I'm going to be thinking it. Also, there is a very disturbing trend afoot where scientists and ethicists are weighing in against robot sex.
Yeah.
And that I take personally because I believe robot sex is the answer to many of the world's ills. And I welcome our new robot overlords, and I'm concerned that that there are going to be people who are going to step in and they're going to prevent the manufacture and sale of these robots, and that concerns me a great deal. I don't want them telling me what's good for me.
Right. Stay out of your bedroom.
Thank you.
Right.
Also, there is a movement afoot to get someone into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame who is not a musician. Now, they do have this category. There are people who are influential, people mm-hmm. who have done a lot to help the rock and roll industry who are not musicians themselves. And we're going to introduce you to a campaign to get another one of them into the Hall of Fame. That's on today's Kevin and Bean Show. And I'm very excited about this. His name is Andy Weir. He is a very smart man who has written one of the best-selling books of 2015. And you know how we love books on the Kevin and Bean Show. You know what? That's what we're all about. The book is called The Martian, and you care because it is going to be a movie coming out in a couple of weeks starring Matt Damon. And it looks awesome, and the book is awesome. And he's a very smart man who wrote the book, and we're going to talk to him all about that. Plus, we'll talk to an asthmatic otter. All of that on the Kevin and Bean Show and Ralph Showbiz Beat right after this on K-Rock.
Playing that for everybody who missed
thanks.
The monkeys.
Wait a minute.
This week. Because Antenna TV took them off the air to show some 90s sitcom
show
called Small Wonder about a robot girl.
Small Wonder's good.
And then, of course, they showed the Flying Nun.
Right, well,
of course.
But no more monkeys.
Oh, come on.
So get ready for 2016. We're going to hear a lot of monkeys and see a lot of monkeys.
Why?
Hopefully Antenna TV will bring them back.
Flying
start
monkeys?
Your letters now.
Start them now? Start my letters now?
Wait, are we
gentlemen,
literally
start your letters?
Supposed to write letters to Antenna TV? Because
and you're supposed to start now for 2016 because it takes a long time to write a letter. You know that.
So they bumped the monkeys for Small Wonder? Is that what happened?
Small Wonder.
That
must be one of your favorite shows, Bean. It's about a robot and a little girl.
Right? Does have all the things
that's
I love.
Everything that you love.
Hey, it's Tuesday morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Ralph Garber joins us.
Time
for our first look at the showbiz beat. What's going on, man?
Why should I join you? Are you coming apart?
A zing! I'm lighty hoy!
Come on. That worked back in the 30s. Why shouldn't it work now? Hey, the Emmy Awards were Sunday night.
What? Yeah. Was this in the news?
I believe it was. The 67th Annual Primetime Emmy Awards, of course, aired on Fox on Sunday night with host Andy Samberg. No one cared. Variety says the show had the smallest television audience on record for an Emmys Award program. Just 11.9 million viewers.
Look, there's a lot of reasons why.
Yes.
One of them has to be that
no Foo Fighters.
HBO won everything, and most people don't have HBO. Most people don't watch Veep, Game of Thrones, and Olive Kitteridge.
People don't know that they won before they watch the awards,
That's not the weirdest reason.
They didn't get sent home a letter.
No,
saying, hey, HBO's going to win everything. If you don't have HBO, you won't be interested.
I'm saying if you tuned in and you sat there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and it's show after show after show you don't watch and have never heard of, there's not much incentive to stick around. You're not seeing your TV stars on the screen. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you're still seeing them in the audience. You're seeing them nominated. You're still rooting for them. I think you may be off the beam on this one.
All right.
A large reason I believe behind it was the big NFC rematch between the Seattle Seahawks and
Packers.
Packers, yeah. And that's why they put it on a Monday night last week, was to avoid the conflict with football. But Fox
last
didn't do
week
that.
They showed two Emmys back
to back.
Last
year.
Come on, man! They can't have two Emmys in a week. That's why no one's watching. Why should anyone be interested? Are they going to make it a weekly series, the Emmys?
Perhaps I meant last year. I'm just saying Fox maybe should have taken a page out of that book and not played against football.
Yeah, they should have sent Bill Belichick over there to steal their playbook.
Whatever it takes.
Really?
Right?
Really?
Hear about Volkswagen, by the way?
Cheating
Volkswageners?
That's a bad deal right there.
They put a chip in their car so that when you got your smog test, it would engage the emissions control technology, but when you're driving around normally, it wouldn't. So you'd pass the smog test, but you'd still be polluting the air.
Wow.
They were cheating at smog tests. That explains their new model, the Volkswagen Patriot.
Oh, how dare you.
Zing, nope. Lady, hoi, hoi, hoi.
And word is out, and their stock is just tanked.
Yes. And they're making a tank. So it all ties together. Hey, Halloween's around the corner. Do you got your costume yet? Everybody have their costumes? You got your costume? Hey, you got a costume? Well, I got one for you. How about the sexy Donald Trump Halloween costume? That's right, ladies. It's time for you to buy your Donna T. Rump Shaker.
Nope.
Yeah, come on.
Uh-uh.
It's the sexy Donald Trump, ladies.
Why does that have to exist?
Because it's not Donald Trump. It's Donna T. Rump Shaker.
Oh, my God.
T. Rump Shaker?
Nope.
Come on.
Nope.
For just $69.95, for the low, low price of $69.95, you get the sleeveless collarless shirt, the red tie, the royal blue faux blazer, the royal blue booty shorts, the Make America Great Trucker cap and comb over wig are sold separately, but you probably want to get them to get the whole outfit put together.
No.
Get that at Yandy.com, by the way. Yandy.com features all the sexy Halloween costumes for the ladies. They are also offering the sexy Cecil the Lion costume this year, so make sure you... That's not a joke, by the
what?
Way. I am not kidding. That happened.
No.
Yes.
Oh.
Yep. You heard
you
me.
You can't...
You heard me.
All right.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Dodgers legend Tommy Lasorda is 88 years old today. So we want to say hi to Tommy Lasorda. And, of course, hi to Jane Biondi as well.
Of course.
Actor Scott Baio celebrates his 55th birthday. Chachi's 55? Bonnie Hunt. I love me some Bonnie
Hunt. I do, too.
You know her brother, Mike?
Stop it.
You know, don't you know her brother? Say her brother's,
say
her brother's name.
No, I don't like to say his name. I do not enjoy that.
I don't know him, but I was at a bar once and he got paged.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Bartender was just calling out for him.
All right.
Laura Vandervoort.
Ooh.
Laura Vandervoort. Love her. She, of course, was the OG Supergirl before we got this new Supergirl. And then she was on V, and now she's on another program on television.
Which is
the show that she is on.
Mm-hmm.
Which features, I want to say, mummies? Werewolves? Vampires? Right. Frankenstein monsters? Something of that ilk.
Let's see what she's on.
All right, let's take a break. Everyone, take a sip. Take a sip of your beverage, whatever you have there with you. And we're going to wait while Beam does some research.
Well, I've got her page up here, but they don't automatically make it evident what she's on. Come on, Dave should know. He knows all this.
Like Dave's listening to our show.
Kind of kids. Well, I guess we'll have to get back to you on that.
And Tatiana Maslany.
Oh, there you go.
Celebrates her 30th birthday today. I hope she's not out there on the red carpet looking for beans. Because that would be something, wouldn't it, kids?
That was not a well-thought-out bit, was it?
Not a highlight?
She's on a show called Bitten.
See, I told you.
Bitten.
Bitten.
That's what it's called.
I think it's werewolves, I want to say.
Probably so.
Yeah, I think so. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Why can't Foo Fighters just play like full-time in Southern California? Why do they have to leave?
Right? Just
every day I wake up and I go, oh, my God, that happened last night? Every night seems like it's more amazing than the night before.
Yeah, Stevie Nicks last night.
Stevie Nicks on stage with Foo Fighters. Jack Black also stopped by to sing a song. They're just having the time of their lives. They're just the best. Hey, speaking of music, Red Bull Sound Space yesterday had a great deal going with Silver Sun Pickups. They were performing yesterday afternoon at 3, and that means, as we do, we rerun the show for 24 hours, and you get a chance to see it for free at krock.com until 3 o'clock today. See the Silver Sun Pickups and the Red Bull Sound Space here at KROQ. Again, go to krock.com. The Seattle Aquarium is very popular. Allie, it's one of the places that I often take visitors when they come up to see me. And it's about to become even more popular because they have a very special little sea otter at the Seattle Aquarium. He was a victim of the Western Washington wildfires that have just ravaged this area this summer. It's been awful. I mean, hundreds of thousands of acres have burned. But it's made the air pretty bad. And a sea otter at the Seattle Aquarium was having trouble breathing. And they have determined that as a result of the fires, he now has asthma.
I didn't know.
Poor little sea otter.
I didn't know animals got asthma.
Animals do get asthma.
Oh.
And what do you think they have done with him but given him an inhaler? Like so many, I'm sure there are people listening right now who are also asthmatic who have to use an inhaler. And they had to teach an otter how to use an inhaler.
What?
He's 1 year old, and we wanted to find out more about this process. Like, how do you even get an otter to understand what he's supposed to do with an inhaler? Because he can't make the mental connection, I wouldn't think, between breathing into this tube and being able to feel better and breathe better. So we asked Dave if we could get somebody on the line to speak with us from the Seattle Aquarium, and I believe we have that line up now. Hello, good morning.
Oh, no.
You okay?
Hey, what's up? Good morning.
Is this Mishka the sea otter?
Yes, it is.
What are the chances you answer the phone?
Well, you called me.
Right, but I thought I'd be talking to a handler, a doctor, or something.
Yeah, well, lucky. It's your lucky day.
Yes, it is.
Mishka, how are you feeling?
I'm okay. I got a little asthma.
Right.
Oh, man. Mishka. This sucks.
Yeah, it's sad.
Hold on a second.
Okay. Ooh, there's the inhaler.
Yeah.
Wow.
Feel good?
Yeah, what's up?
Well, the article I saw said that you have a trainer. Her name is Sarah Perry. Tell me about her.
Oh, you see the cans on this girl.
Oh.
What?
Massive.
That's odd for an otter?
Yes. Yeah. Why would you notice?
Because I like cans. Who doesn't like cans, man? What are you? Huh? You're not into cans?
Well, no, it's not that. It's just that, you're an otter.
Yeah.
So it said that she used food to teach you how to push your nose onto the inhaler and take a deep breath. Was this a confusing time for you when she was trying to teach
this? I pushed my nose on her inhaler. You know what I'm saying?
Mishka, we're trying to figure out how you use the inhaler.
Okay. Oh, that's better. Yeah, she taught me with food. Amongst other things.
Okay. God, this is really gross.
Yeah, I know. It's utterly unacceptable.
Oh, wow. That just sounds painful.
It sounds real bad.
I'll tell you, this fire they had up here, it's just been crazy.
No, it's been real serious.
The whole
bad.
Area just been thrown into utter chaos.
A lot of things surprising me about our little otter friend, Mishka.
Yeah. So, they gave me this medicine. It's better, but I don't know. I had to cut down on my pot smoking. That's the hard part.
You were smoking weed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me and the other otters, we get together. put up our black light posters, turn on some, you know, Dark Side of the Moon.
Right. A one-year-old otter's into Pink Floyd?
Just spark up. We had a right? good time, but yeah, like I had to cook. I'm just into edibles now because my lungs can't take it.
Probably easier.
They really give you a lot of leeway up there at the aquarium, huh?
Well, Seattle, man, anything goes up here with these granola goes. Liquors. You know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
I mean, everything is otterly acceptable up here.
All right, we get that the word otter sounds like the word other. We get that, Mishka. You okay? All right. Well, listen, we're gonna let you go and maybe just deal with your inhaler. But
that's better.
You all right?
Yeah. So well, listen, why don't you guys come up and see me? Bring some fish.
Oh, okay.
Goddamn funny about that. I love fish.
Well, just based on what we've learned about you already in this interview, I assumed there was going to be some awful joke.
No, that would be utterly ridiculous.
Okay, there you go. What's up, Beer Mug?
I just want to start off by saying I was not the right man for what we're about to talk about.
Beer Mug, as you know, from time to time, we send out on the red carpet to do interviews. And I have to be honest. I got to give Mug some credit. He's right. He was not the right man for this assignment. Look, this was a particularly tough job for you because this was not your area. It wouldn't have been mine either, by the way. This is the Streamies. The Streamy Awards went down, what, last Thursday night, I want to say, at the Palladium
Correct.
In Hollywood?
Yep.
And they aired it on VH1. And this is awards that are handed out for YouTube stars and for Viners and for Snapchatters and people like that. And I bet 99% of the people on, you know, that were on the red carpet would not be familiar to most people, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was having to ask everybody who they were mm-hmm. and what they did.
Right.
Because I had no idea.
And it sounded like you weren't getting a lot of help necessarily from their people, but here's one example of how you handled it.
Beer Mug here at the 2015 VH1 stream is with Natasha Bedingfield. How you doing?
Bedingfield?
No, you're not.
Well,
the publicist just said Natasha, so I was like, which Natasha could it be? She left me in the lurch.
So basically, you just,
oh, no.
You just guessed that her last name was Bedingfield because that's a Natasha, the singer that you've heard of.
Totally guessed. Just like the time I guessed Casey and the Sunshine Band or Cool and the Gang or whoever.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Are you just naming bands from the 70s?
I love the fact that you didn't know her name, so you just guessed it.
Yeah.
You just sound so defeated. Like, this is right at the very beginning of the night. You're like, oh, my God, is this going to be a long
First
night?
Interview, and I was just super embarrassed.
Nailed it.
Look, I can understand you wouldn't want to be face-to-face with that person when you don't even know who she is. But again, it wasn't your fault. You did the best you could. I love the fact in that interview, by the way, and let me play it again because this is a constant thread through Beer Mug's interviews. He always mics himself and almost never mics the person he's talking to. Listen again.
Hi,
that's
sir.
Not the right one. Here we go.
Beer Mug here at the 2015 VH1 stream is with Natasha Bedingfield. How you doing?
Bedingfield?
No, you're not. Well, the publicist just said Natasha, so I was like, which Natasha could it be? She left me in the lurch.
You hear her in the background? She's like, I wish. Somebody named Sig Wilder, I think, was up next. Here's Muggs.
Hi, Sig Wilder. How you doing? Beer Mug from K-Rock. I like your dress.
I'm Natasha from K-Rock. I love K-Rock.
What's your favorite song on K-Rock?
Rock and Roll.
Rock and Roll. Wow, that's a broad song.
Wow. Okay. A broad song.
I admit that rock and roll was not a good answer to what's your favorite song, but it is certainly not a broad song. I don't know what's happening here with this person, but you seem to be trying to tell her how to pronounce her name, I think is what's happening.
Okay.
Hi. Lauren? How do you pronounce your last name?
Geraldo.
Like Geraldo, but with the hard G.
But like in English.
Yeah.
What's happening? What are either of you talking about?
I don't know. I was just kind of doing, I was just like trying to make sure I got her name right. Like Geraldo, like Geraldo with a hard G. And she's
right.
like.
Why are you telling her that though?
She knows
how to pronounce her name.
I think I was just thinking out loud. More,
okay, that's
more
good.
So, yeah.
It's good to do.
And what does she mean when she says, yeah, I like that, but in English? What is she talking about?
I don't know. I think she's racist.
It could be. Now, here's a Viner that I've heard of. She's one of the most popular on the channel. She's, I think she's from South America someplace. Her name is Lily Pons. Now, Muggs had never heard, very pretty, by the way, Muggs, as you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Muggs had never heard of her before, but within 5 seconds, he's decided that he wants to dedicate his life to being just like her, which I love very much. You fell very much under her spell.
I have a K-Rock Beer Mug Twitter handle and Vine, but I don't do much, and the stuff I do is terrible, so I'll never be as lucrative as you,
no,
but
it's okay.
I one day hope to strive to be as good as you.
Thank you.
He one day hopes to strive to be as good as this woman he never heard of until 30 seconds ago. Now, there's a little bit of a theme in these beer mug interviews, and that's that Muggs is a little – I don't know if there's something going on in your life the night you went down there to record these, but Muggs is a little bit down on Muggs because you're already very critical of your own Instagram, which is fine, by the way. There's nothing wrong with your Instagram. But now you talk to another guy. His name is Ethan something, and he apparently is pretty buff, and that just gets you into a downward spiral when you start looking down and thinking about your own body.
Ethan, that's awesome that you stop and talk with me, such a slovenly fat drunk that I am. And you're just an incredible athlete and a perfect specimen running ultra marathons in 100 miles.
I feel like the answer for you is not to constantly compare yourselves to these people who are 10 years younger than you are and are millionaires.
Yeah, I just wanted them to make sure that they knew they were better than I was.
Right, but
why?
But what's going on with you, Muggs?
I'm in a rough patch. Bean, you know, I got a lot of life choices to make, and I'm not making a lot of the right ones. So, you know, just have to let them know.
Try that again.
Words.
All right. I don't know who you're talking to here, but now we're getting into a patch of interviews with Beer Mug on the Red Carpet at the Streamies last week where Muggs talks about Muggs. And these are kind of my favorite. And this one, I think, is my favorite of the whole batch.
I got to talk about myself now because that's what I do. I challenged a bartender in Las Vegas one time to make me the most disgusting drink that would knock me on my ass the hardest.
Yeah.
Please note, by the way, how little whoever is being interviewed here is being mic'd, okay? Please note how much Muggs, how little interviewee.
And he mixed, I swear to God, it was like Goldschlager, Tabasco, 151. Mm. He mixed it all in a pot.
Great alpha.
I took a shot. My whole body started burning. Mm. And I woke up later to be...
By the way, this poor woman, God bless her for being such a good sport. She's really pretending to be interested in Beer Mug's story about that time he got drunk in Las Vegas.
She did the high pitch, really? Ooh, I don't care at all.
She is a very generous listener. She's never met this guy before. She doesn't care about this guy. Now she's being basically forced into a corner to listen to him recount stories about when he got drunk. She's being very nice to you, Muggs.
And I woke up later to be found in the bathroom in my hotel room with trying to take my clothes off because I was vomiting all over myself, and my friends started taking pictures of me. Do you make drinks like that?
How old were you?
What? That was the actual question? That led up to that? Mugs! Oh, my God.
And my friends started taking pictures of me. Do you make drinks like that?
I had that whole entire backstory in the middle of my question.
Oh, God.
So then she asked, I think, a very reasonable question when you look at Muggs and look at the life choices that he's making.
How old were you?
this is maybe like 23, 24.
I know when you say that you add 5 years. Way to go, bud.
So she totally nailed you.
Oh, yeah,
she tried
got
to
me.
Say it was 23, 24, so she knows you were really like 28.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means this practically just happened. Yeah. You're practically describing your current life.
Yep.
God bless you. All right, superstar on the red carpet at the Streamies, the legendary Sir Mix-a-Lot stops by, and you can imagine, as all of us would be, Muggs is very excited.
Mr. Mix-a-Lot. Sir Mix-a-Lot, as he's known. How you doing, man?
I can't believe they let me in here, man.
Dude, it's great to see you. I didn't think I'd ever get to meet you as long as I live.
One of these things just doesn't belong here.
Well, it's good to see you. First of all, is this your first Streamy Awards?
First Streamy Awards, and I thought it was going to be like all porn.
He was kidding there, right?
Yeah, no, he was kidding. Totally kidding.
Like I made a left turn somewhere.
Sir Mix-a-Lot, enjoy the Streamies, man. Thanks for stopping and talking with K-Rock. I love you since the day I was born. In sixth grade, I used to sing Baby Got. In sixth grade.
Okay, you just made me feel old. So do I stab you now or later?
Stab him now. Stab him now, Sir Mix-a-Lot.
He wasn't kidding there.
I love that you've loved him since the day you were born, by the way.
Yeah.
I love that. That's quite a compliment.
Yeah.
And finally, for this edition of Beer Mug's Red Carpet Interviews and the Streamy Awards, you talked to Omi. Now, he's not a household name, but he certainly is a big star right now because he's got one of the songs of the summer, that cheerleader song that Kiss FM plays every 25 minutes by him, Omi. So Mugs, as you know, is a drummer, Allie.
Yeah.
And
he
Muggs
likes beats.
Loves the opportunity whenever he gets to talk to a musician to talk about his music skills, because that's really the takeaway for any interview with Omi is what's the interviewer? What's he got going on? And Mirabug is happy to share.
You know what's funny, Omi, about that, what you just said, a voice noting it. Sometimes when I'm falling asleep, I'm really into beats and like music. Right when I hit REM sleep, which is like right the time, I start getting these crazy beats in my head, and I got to tell myself, oh, I got to wake up and kind of like in mouth the beat to remind myself, hey, I did this. I came up with it.
I'm so glad that Omi was there to hear you talk about how you capture the beats that you dream. And where are all these magical beats, by the way, that you're waking up and saving because they're so great?
I never save them. Never. But he was totally picking up what I was putting down. He knew what I was talking about.
Well, we wouldn't know because he wasn't mic'd. Nice job, Bugs.
Thank you, Bean.
Ralph, you're going to be able to contain yourself in 20 minutes when
when
Gotham's Ben McKenzie gets here?
No.
I know it's your show. I know he's your man.
Oh, Jim Gordon.
The future Commissioner Gordon. Very excited. Gotham returned last night on Fox. We'll catch up with Ben coming up. But first... I have a story that I want to run by you about something. Can you put the lightsaber down for just a second?
Sorry.
Story about something that happened. It's not a who's the dick per se, but it's a did I make the right call that I need your advice on.
Nope.
Something that happened. You don't know, man.
I haven't
heard.
I know.
Something that happened on a flight last week that I took from Barcelona, Spain to London, England. But before I tell you that story, I just want to brag a little bit and tell you who I was sitting next to on the plane. And by next to, I mean I was on the aisle and then he was on the aisle on the same aisle on the seat across from me. Could I have said that better? Or was that
fine? I have no idea where he is now.
All right. I'm sitting in, say, row 5 or something like that on the aisle seat.
Okay.
He's sitting in row 5 on the other side of the aisle. So we are 2.5 feet apart or something like that. So technically I'm sitting next to him, but not in the, we're not touching elbows.
Sweet Jesus.
Who did I sit next to on that plane from the Star Wars universe?
Now, wait a minute. Next to you or across the aisle from?
Across the aisle from.
On which aisle? Gilligan's
That's
aisle?
Not important. That's not important. Okay. Who did I sit next to on the plane? Everybody gets one guess, and then I'll tell you who from the Star Wars universe was on my plane sitting next to me but across the aisle. I'm
going to have to go with Alec Guinness.
Alec Guinness has been dead for many years now, Ralph.
I guess
but
I
an
won't have to
guess.
Go with that then. I'm going to go with – do I get to go first?
Yeah, you can go first. And I'll tell you what, let's make it interesting. Why don't I offer up some money? Because I've only given you one guess.
Woo!
And there's hundreds of Star Wars characters.
Why not, Bean? This is America.
I'm going to put $10 up just as a giveaway, just for free, if you luck out and guess the Star Wars person I sat next to. $10.
Anthony Daniels.
An excellent guess because he, of course, was in the Star Wars movies. Allie McKay.
I'm going to go Peter Mayhew.
Peter Mayhew, right? Chip, you got to guess.
Billy D. Williams.
Billy
D. Williams.
Well, I wouldn't have been able to wait until today to tell you.
That's why I think it's someone not super well-known, because you would have been exploding to tell
us. It's not someone super well-known at all, but it was still very exciting for me. I sat next to John Boyega, who is the Black Stormtrooper in Star Wars 7. And it was pretty exciting. And he had a stormtrooper backpack that he pulled down from above his head when we got off the plane. He was wearing a stormtrooper backpack, and he's a stormtrooper. I'm not sensing a lot of enthusiasm for me sitting next to the Black Stormtrooper.
Well, we haven't seen the movie yet, but
right, but it's still pretty cool.
It'll probably be cooler once we see the movie.
That's
but
what I'm
wow!
Hey,
I get on the plane and I see him, and I go, "Oh my God, I can't believe it's the Black Stormtrooper!"
All right, I don't think the character's name is Black Stormtrooper.
Well, I don't know what it is. I can't remember.
Is it Finn? I want to say Finn.
That sounds right. It might be Finn.
Yeah, I don't think it's Black Stormtrooper.
I just was excited.
I'm sorry. I was just excited. That's all. You weren't excited. All right. Here's the question that I have for you on the same flight.
Segment still going on?
Where were you sitting?
Are we still on the radio?
You in the same seat.
I thought you guys would be excited that I saw the Black Stormtrooper.
I'm surprised that your judgment was misguided.
All right. So I'll try to do this fast. So I'm waiting to get on the plane. And I'm there in the airport in Barcelona, and we're all standing there.
We've established that the flight is from London, from Barcelona to London, and you are on an aisle seat. That's a given. Can we just move forward?
Waiting to get on the plane, and all of a sudden, from around the corner comes one of the hottest women I have ever seen in my life.
I'm already creeped out.
I mean, she is playboy-rific. She is model-rific. She is a gorgeous Spanish woman. She looks like she's about 25. She's got beautiful skin and beautiful long blonde hair. And she's wearing this little – well, surprisingly, she's wearing this little airport uniform because she works at the Barcelona airport. And I'm thinking, girls like that don't have jobs working at the airport. It was crazy to me. And she walks up and she has some words with the person who's getting ready to let everybody onto the plane. And he points to a passenger and she goes and she escorts that passenger onto the plane. It turns out that that passenger who is pre-boarding, along with the old people and the babies, is blind. Okay? So she's the airport representative who escorts the blind person onto the plane ahead of the general passenger boarding.
Okay. Jeez. Oh, jeez.
Was he also in Star Wars?
Now, why are you OGsing, Allie?
Because I know what you're about to say.
So she's a seeing eye babe is what she is.
She's a seeing eye babe. Exactly, yeah.
But you're going to say how sad is it for that blind man that he couldn't even see
Why did they get an ugly girl to take them on? Who would know the difference?
Obviously, that was everybody's first thought is, what a waste. Oh, my God, what a waste of this goddess that the blind dude is being escorted onto the plane. And he doesn't know. He thinks it's like some 85-year-old grandma, right? So here's my question for you. The entire flight that I'm on the plane that I mentioned I'm in Barcelona, the entire time I'm sitting next to the Black Stormtrooper, I'm thinking to myself, I got to tell this guy.
She is?
Yes, I have to tell the blind guy how ridiculously hot this chick was that he was arm in arm with walking onto the plane. Don't I?
No.
No.
Like wouldn't rubbing it in? Like,
you want
to be blind because you should see her.
Your eyes are missing right now. Yikes.
I would think you would very much want to know. You would very much appreciate that information if you were a blind guy. Otherwise, you'll never know.
How would that make his life better?
Well, this was the question. This is what was going through my mind the whole time when I wasn't thinking about the Black Stormtrooper is what are the upsides and what are the downsides? Because I don't know anything about blindy. If he like used to be able to see and he knows what a crazy hot chick looks like, it might be very exciting for him to realize that he just was partying with one. Maybe partying isn't the phrase. But it might be
walking. By partying, do you mean walking? Which I'm thinking in your world probably they're the same thing. Was just walking for 30 seconds with an attractive woman.
Right, but it might be very exciting for him to know. You think back to those days back when he used to be able to see about what a hot lady looks like. I'm saying he might enjoy that information. But then I thought, if he's been blind since birth, he doesn't know from hot. And now I'm wasting my time. What should I have done?
You should have sat there and not said anything. And not even thought anything. Just sat thoughtless.
You should have gone into the restroom and just taking your own life. You should have just opened
aggressive.
Up a vein.
I feel like
just bled out into the blue water of the toilet.
I was asking my wife if I should go talk to him, and she said her reaction was very similar to yours, which is not just no, but hell no. And I feel like I let my brother down. I feel like it was on me to let him know what a baller he was that day. And I feel like I should have said something.
He didn't boner, all right? He didn't score. He just got walked.
I know, but still.
So he's not a baller, okay? He didn't get anything. It wasn't like Braille time with boobies or anything. It was just that here's your seat, sir. That's all that happened.
Braille time with boobies.
Yeah, to my favorite Ronald Reagan film.
Bad time for bus.
Oh, you failed. All right, we were in the same row, but across the aisle from one another, is what I was saying, if I didn't make that clear before.
I just imagine, like, that scene from Airplane, where Robert Hayes just keeps telling the story over and over again, and everyone he sits next to commits suicide rather than talk to him any longer over and over again. Every time Bean's on a plane, I just imagine the person sitting next to him just immolating themselves, setting themselves on fire, or jumping out the window, or just hanging themselves.
Hey, congratulations to Ruth Mercado from Hacienda Heights. Thanks so much for listening, Ruth. You have won tickets to go see Muse, Staples Center, December 18th, and you're on the roof at the Ace Hotel for the exclusive K-Rock After Party. Your chance to win is coming up, and we'll talk all things Gotham with our friend Ben McKenzie just after the top of the hour. Time for the Showbiz Beat now. Here's Ralph.
Speaking of shows on Fox, must be a surprise to people in TV shows when they know they have celebrity fans. Because when you're doing your TV show, you look at the ratings, whatever, and you assume people are watching, especially if it's a hit. But I doubt you think about big-name celebrities watching your show.
Sure. It's always a surprise, even on, you know, on this little radio show when we have guests in, and they're like, oh, yeah, I've been listening to you guys forever. We're like, you shouldn't be listening to us. You're better than us.
Taraji P. Henson talked to People magazine, and she said that she encountered a fan of the show Empire recently, who also, he admitted, had a crush on her character, Cookie Lyon. And that fan was Jack Nicholson. Can you imagine running into Nicholson?
Wow.
And he's like, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Empire. Mm-hmm. I think you should get half the Empire, Cookie. It would be awesome for her.
Totally.
How hard did he hit on her?
Yeah, you know, he wants. Yeah.
And probably had her.
He wants to break off a little piece of Cookie. But that would be so cool if Jack says he watches your show. Yeah. They should try to get Jack on the show. Wouldn't that be the
Definitely.
Best? If he was like some old school record executive or something, comes in and she's like,
you can't have my Empire.
I'll take your Empire if I want your Empire. Awesome.
Is it Cookie?
Yes, yes, Cookie Monster. It is Cookie. I told you about the sexy Donald Trump costume, right?
Yep.
Unfortunately, yes.
Donna T. Rump Shaker? Right? Come on, ladies. Go to Yandy.com. Get your costumes.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Well,
look, be Donald Trump for Halloween. That's fine.
Don't be sexy Donald Trump.
Be
Donna T. Rump Shaker. Well, Donald's got more problems than just his sexy Halloween costume. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has dropped out of the GOP presidential race as of late yesterday, but now he's trying to get all other candidates to drop out as well so they can all team up and take down Donald Trump. That doesn't seem sporting.
What do you? I don't understand. He's trying to get other candidates to drop out? That does nothing but help Donald Trump.
No, he wants to thin the herd. He wants to clear the field so they can pick one significant other candidate to go up against Donald and then topple his regime and then just move on and have a legitimate Republican candidate versus this TV host. We don't need an apprentice in the White House, Donald.
So he wants to have his own convention, basically, and pick a guy who's going to run.
Yes.
Hmm. Gotcha.
Not only is he politically motivated, but Scott Walker said that God has chosen him to topple Donald. The Bible is full of stories of people who were called to be leaders in unusual ways, he said, regarding God's selection of him. Today, I believe that I am being called to lead, helping to clear the field in this race so that a positive conservative message can rise to the top of the field. So Donald's got to take on Scott Walker now.
If Scott Walker is so tight with God, why was he running 10th in the field?
Because God works in mysterious ways, Bean. You don't understand. It's a mystery of God.
Now, if you like the media, give him a big hand. And if you don't, give him a big boo. Oh,
no. Is that Mr. Bird there in the background?
It sure was.
Yeah. Rob Dyrdek's off the market, ladies. Sorry.
Rob Dyrdek.
He got married over the weekend. He married Brianna Noel Flores last Saturday. A very romantic, intimate outdoor ceremony, according to people who were there. So congratulations to our buddy Rob. Hope he has many, many happy hours of marriage. Years. Hey, tonight's the new Muppet Show, Allie.
Yay!
Are you going to be watching?
Of course I am.
You know, Fozzie's going to be on.
Waka waka!
Apparently the new Muppet Show tonight features a new format, a few changes. instead of the old-school vaudeville-type show they had on The Muppet Show, now Miss Piggy is the host of a late-night talk show that follows Jimmy Kimmel called Up Late with Miss Piggy. Kermit's the executive producer, but they've split up, so now they each have new significant others, and that's causing some tension in their relationship.
Mm-hmm. Is that Cookie?
I don't believe it's Cookie. Fozzie Bear will be Miss Piggy's sidekick on her late-night show, Allie.
And rightfully so. He deserves his time in the spotlight.
And who's running the show's craft service table, do you think?
Is that Cookie?
No, it's not Cookie.
Oh.
Swedish Chef!
Aww.
Of course.
Makes sense.
Ralph, I believe our friend Allie McKay will be hosting highlights of The Muppets on tomorrow morning's Kevin and Bean show.
I can't wait!
I believe we'll be curious to hear what she thought about it.
I do know this, that it has been revealed who Fozzie goes out of species to date.
Is it you?
No, but I feel pretty good about it. Usually I would be jealous, I'd be very upset. However, it's Ricky Lindholm from Garfunkel and Oates.
Oh.
Yeah, so he likes blondes is what I'm saying.
You got a shot?
Yep.
So you're in.
I'm in.
And this may be a record. Sicario, which by the way, I'm dying to see. Can't wait to see it. Looks awesome.
Looks good.
Has only opened in 6 theaters so far in the U.S., but Variety's reporting that Lionsgate Films is in the process of developing a sequel to the film, which would center on Benicio del Toro's character, a mysterious hitman. Sicario means hitman, you know, in Spanish.
Huh.
And so they're developing a sequel based around his character. Apparently they're very pleased with how the film came out. But I think it's kind of bold of them to develop a second film in a franchise that is yet really to hit theaters. It does open up this weekend, however, in theaters everywhere. So I hope that their faith is well-founded. It looks great. And speaking of sequels, we do not need this. Ouija 2! That's right. Woo! Another Ouija movie. Because Ouija came out, and now another one's going to be Ouija!
Look, that was a dumb movie. I didn't see it, but I assume it was a dumb movie. But remember when it came out, Ralph, and we took calls from our listeners who were seriously spooked by things that had happened to them with the Ouija board in their life? Remember that?
I do remember that.
We talked to a whole bunch of people who really didn't expect to, but ended up being very afraid of the Ouija board. Took it very seriously.
Here's what I didn't remember. The original Ouija film cost $5 million to make. That was the budget for the film. Grossed over $100 million.
Oh, no, I did not.
Yes, it did, too. Hence, Ouija 2. So it shows you what I know.
But, and by the way, I'm sure there was somebody in some meeting who was laughed out of the room for suggesting a Ouija board movie, too.
Oh, it's craziness. Today's celebrity birthdays, Tatiana Maslany. Hey, Tatiana Maslany, how you do? How you go, Tatiana? Hey, how about a pizza pie? What's the matter, you, Tatiana Maslany? Hey, how's it going, you? She's Italian, right?
She finally got nominated.
Right?
But how does she not win all the Emmys?
Because?
With the performances that she gives on that show every week.
Because there's no justice in the world.
All right.
30 years old today. Laura Vandervoort. She's 31. I called her the OG Supergirl earlier because she was Supergirl in Smallville. And I was corrected by many of my fellow geeks who said, like, come on, Helen Slater with the original Supergirl. I, of course, meant TV's original Supergirl, so I had to do a caveat.
Get it together.
Sorry. Bonnie Hunt is 54. Scott Baio celebrates his 55th birthday. And Dodgers legend Tommy Lasorda is 88 years old today. Tommy, anybody
you want to... Don't forget, say hello to Jay Biondi.
Timing. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show this week.
All right, so when you hear that, Ralph, then what happens?
Then I go down to my father's secret cave in the basement. I put on my cape and my cowl, and I start fighting crime.
No, no, that's not you. That's the theme from the TV show Gotham, which returned last night on Fox, Channel 11 at 8 o'clock. Ben McKenzie is, of course, Jim Gordon. He joins us back in studio on the Kevin Beach Show at K-Rock. Hey, Ben.
Hi, guys.
Feels like this show has been off forever. I've been waiting for the show to return.
I know. It's so silly the way the network TV season works. It's like we're going to give you a ton of episodes up until, what is it, randomly selected April, May, and then no TV
then,
for
then
4 or 5
away.
Months.
Yeah,
and you're
exactly.
Gone.
We've actually been shooting at basically the equivalent of the Batcave for the past 4 months. So we're on number 8 in terms of where we're shooting. So we've got a lot of them already done, and we're really happy with them. And Yeah.
I mean, and you're doing something different this season. You're splitting it into two, correct?
Yeah, we're splitting it into two seasons, and we're also really going away from this Crime of the Week thing that we did last year, mm-hmm. which I think was basically a mistake, which was try to sort of introduce a new villain and sort of have them commit a crime, meet them, catch them, send them to Arkham all in one episode. It didn't really give a very satisfying experience for the viewer. So I think there's a better show in there, and we're doing it this year.
It's so weird to hear you say that because, and I'm sure you meet people like us all the time who loved Gotham last season. I mean, you can pick it apart if you want, but it was great.
No. And I'm sorry. I'm a tough critic on myself and things that I'm involved with. So I just feel like we did a really good... I would give last season like a B+, but the good news is that I think there's an A this season. I really do think that. I'm not actually sort of talking bull. And so I'm really proud of it last year, but this year is better.
Well, I think your point is well taken, is the stuff that was really involving was sort of the overreaching arc of the characters and what was going on in their lives.
Thank you for saying it better than I said it.
No, I mean, I loved the criminal stuff, and I loved all that thing, but I was much more fascinated what was going on with Jim and Lee and that relationship, and Barbara, what was happening with her, and you know, the Wayne kid, whatever he turns out to be someday.
I don't know, something, I'm not sure. Going down into your parents' basement to find out what your dad was down in this, like, creepy, dark, wet area. Yeah. What could possibly that be about?
Nothing good, I'll tell you that much. There's going to be a wet box of old Playboys or something. He's not going to want to come across.
It's like, don't go down there.
Don't go down there.
No, nothing good.
But last night I was shocked because I expected... I didn't expect what I saw, which was you basically busted down to traffic cop.
Yes.
Bullock out of the gig completely.
Yes.
I mean, you've pretty much hit bottom, which gives you, I guess, permission to do what happened in the rest of the episode.
Exactly, which is make a deal with the devil and pay the consequences. So that sort of starts us down the trajectory for Jim for the rest of the season, which is a downward trajectory into a kind of a moral abyss, if you will. He's a hero. He's a good guy. But in order to do good things in Gotham, he has to do some bad things.
It seemed like last night the theme was you can have happiness or you can have the truth.
Yes.
And that is certainly true, and I think in your case at some point.
You can have happiness or the truth. You can't have both. Yeah. And so Jim is, I guess, choosing the truth.
It's so interesting because we love cop shows. And, Ben, we had you on, you know, lots of times in the Southland years. And the thing about being a police officer is you can be as idealistic as you want when you put on that badge. But then when you're in the real world, as Jim Gordon is in the world of Gotham here, man, things are different, aren't they? And sometimes you find yourself doing stuff that you couldn't have imagined that you would ever do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's certainly relevant nowadays with all the sort of coverage of, you know, the police for good or bad. It's a tricky job. It's a really tough job to do, so I have a lot of sympathy. By the way, can I just say real quickly, Regina King?
Yeah, how about that? On Sunday night, Regina won the Emmy.
Exactly, last week anyway. I know it's old news by now, but I'm just so happy that she
I was going to ask you about that anyway, because we were lucky enough to have Regina in on the show a few weeks ago. We'd not met her before, and of course we talked a lot about Southland and stuff, and she was so great on that American Crime. She was so great on that, and what a lovely lady. We just fell in love with, although we found out she was a Dolphins fan, so that kind of ruined her whole image.
So sad.
Dolphins.
But we could not have been happier to see her get up and win that award. And she looked genuinely shocked.
I don't think she expected it at all.
And by the way, speaking of the Emmys, you were out there on the stage.
Yeah, yeah. I presented, and it was a blast, man. I mean, I thought Andy Samberg did a great job. It was a really fun
show. Is that
weird
for you, even though you've been in the business for a long time now, when you get the call that says they want you to present at the Emmys?
Yeah, it's really weird, particularly considering that, you know, I think the people that really thrive there are comedians. I am not a comedian. So, you know, you sort of go out there and you're like, oh, I'll just, you know, stand here and say some things and, you know, present some awards. It's
and you
so
went
lovely.
Out with Jamie Alexander, right?
I did, from Blindspot, who's absolutely wonderful. She was wearing a dress that weighed 30 pounds. It was made out of metal of some kind.
She was wearing her own weight in a dress?
She was wearing her own weight. Exactly.
Oh, it's crazy.
Hollywood, yes. She was wearing her own weight.
Embarrassed from all those tattoos? Is that what it is? She just had to cover them up as much as possible?
Oh, man. She was telling me it's 7 hours of tattoos, apparently.
You know, it's so funny. As I watched the promo for that show, that's what ran through my mind.
Yes.
Which shows you how sort of calloused I am. I guess I don't buy into the illusion anymore. But I was like, what is makeup like for her every day when she's on the
set? I look at that promo and I just go, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted.
One more Emmys question.
Yes,
what do you? And forgive me if this is impertinent, but don't you get like a trip to the moon or something if you're a presenter? I mean,
they
have an awesome.
No,
gift bag?
You don't.
They
not anymore.
It.
They changed
what?
It. Yeah, man. Yeah.
What? Now you just have to do it for the love.
Yeah, I know. What? What is that bull? for the love? I got a. I went to a party beforehand. I got a. I got a. a sweater from Target. I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you. I got a sweater from Target and a blanket from Target.
Logo on
literally has the Target logo on it.
A promotional sweater.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is my... Yeah. Now, they flew me on an aeroplane out here. They put me
on a real aeroplane?
On a real aeroplane. They put me in a hotel room that had air conditioning, which was very handy.
And it was in Pomona, so it wasn't that far, exactly. Really, from where the show was.
You know,
there was a shuttle bus that took everybody from Fox to and from the event. It was very nice.
What's the point of being an actor anymore if you're not going to get free stuff?
Exactly.
Where's the hooker and blow is what we're asking.
Times have changed. They really have. Not for the better.
See, kids, show business is glamorous. All right, we got to take a quick break. Our friend Ben McKenzie is here. Gotham is back as of last night. Season 2 premiered on Fox. It's Monday nights at 8. Great episode last night, and we'll try to get a little more details about what to expect this season with Ben when we return right after this on K-Rock. Hey, party people, it's 106.7 KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on a Tuesday morning. Our old friend Ben McKenzie in studio with us. He, of course, is Detective James Gordon on Gotham, returning last night for season 2 on Fox. Ben, how long has it been since the first time we had you in on the Kevin and Bean Show? Do you even remember?
I came in during the OC, right? During
It was remember we did a breakfast
season?
With yeah. for the whole breakfast. Cast.
Exactly. Breakfast in the pier, I want to say, or somewhere
yeah,
in Redondo
Santa
or somewhere
pier
there.
Or something?
Yeah.
And what year would that have been? When did the OC go on?
Well,
there?
The OC started in 2003. So I think it was was that first year, 2003?
Yes, it was the first year.
Wow. Years
Dude.
Ago. Or so
we are getting old, but why do you still look like that?
It's a secret serum.
okay. All that Chino water?
Exactly. Yeah. Chino water, the glorious Chino water. It's harsh chemicals
All right.
in that.
We touched on the changes for season 2 on Gotham, and last night, and sorry, we got no choice. We got a spoiler alert. If you didn't watch it, you're a bad person. You
yep.
should have.
Sorry.
Yes. Last night, a prison break at Arkham, yep. and a lot of Gotham's filthiest villains are out there, and yes. some of them we have not seen before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're introducing some new villains this season, including a guy by the name of Theo Gallivan, who comes across as this sort of effete, very powerful figure who has ulterior motives behind him. We have a lot of the iconic villains this season. I mean, we obviously have Penguin, we have Riddler, we have Joker.
Question mark?
Joker, possibly. exactly. Well put. And then we are going to have some more smaller runs. Those characters will be around for a lot of the season, or at least some of them will. And then we'll have Mr. Freeze, we'll have Firefly, we're going to have, wow. you know. So we're really getting into these characters, and like you said before, we're allowing them to sort of breathe a little more. We're not going to, like, introduce them in one episode and send them to Arkham, you know, the next. Right, we're going to let them sit around and understand how the way that they interact with each other also affects the city. Like, it's not just that, you know, it's the good guys trying to catch the bad guys. It's that the bad guys become friendly or become rivalrous, and those friendships and rivalries affect how the city, you know, takes shape as well. So it's kind of this weird cesspool that we're dipping our toe into. It's fun.
Ralph Garman, let me ask you this as a
yes.
lifelong...
Finally, we're getting to my part of the interview.
That's what people want.
Any questions for me,
yeah,
Ben?
No, he was snoozing. He was snoozing in the middle of my answer.
As a guy who grew up immersed in and in love with the mythology of Batman.
Yes.
What is it like for you to see this version of these stories that you know so well?
I think the most compelling part of Gotham is that it's great crime drama above and beyond its attachment to the Batman mythology. So you're seeing life through the eyes of James Gordon, which has always been sort of a secondary character throughout the mythology of this, but you're getting to see his version of what the city was like and the reason behind why Gotham needed a Batman years down the road, you know? So it's fascinating for me as a fan also of like 70s crime dramas of like Serpico and all these great crime movies of the 70s. That's the vibe the show has for me. And that's why I think it succeeds on its own level, all the Batman stuff put aside.
You know? Dude, thank you. That's nice.
No, it's true. I love your character. And I think Donald Logue as Bullock, yeah. it definitely is cut from that sort of world. Mm-hmm. And all this sort of seedy underbelly crime stuff with Robin as Penguin, it just plays as good crime drama above and beyond all the superhero stuff, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. We're trying sort of mishmashing genres here. You know, you got superhero stuff, sure, but you also got noir and you've got sort of a Western style, you know, good, evil sort of
high noon
stuff.
Kind of
high
thing.
Noon stuff. Yeah, yeah. yeah. And then we're going to have amazing actors, like you pointed out, and new ones. Michael Chiklis is joining the show
yes.
from
yes.
The Shield. So talk about a great crime show. I mean, you know, we got the man himself, who was, of course, the commish.
I was kind of sad to see Peter Scolari go, though, because I'm a big fan of his, and he was great as Commissioner Loeb.
And he is terrific. He's terrific. He's one of those actors who is sort of has a second or third resurgence here, and well-deserved. We're getting great New York actors, and New York is such a great place to – that's where we shoot the show, and it's a great place to pull actors from because, you know, all these actors are there probably primarily to do theater, but at this point there's so much film and television work that there's just all of these amazing actors, particularly character actors, are there. They're so fit the show. They fit that kind of darker, moodier, eccentric kind of vibe that we got going on.
And New York, I think, colors the show in a way that Vancouver or L.A. couldn't if you were shooting in those areas.
Absolutely.
You know? It kind of permeates the vibe of the show.
It's got to actually be dirty. It's got to actually be run down, you know? And not that New York, Manhattan at this point is like, you know, it's like Disneyland.
But, right.
But if you get outside Manhattan and you go to the boroughs and you get, when we were all over the place, you get some, you know, you got to get underneath the BQE and have a train going, you know, rolling over you as you try to deliver your dialogue, and then 80 yards later, but you really get the sense that you're in a city like Gotham, because Gotham is supposed to be New York. Yeah. always supposed to be.
What's been prior to Gotham, Ben, what has been your favorite incarnation of Batman?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I'm kind of mixed. I mean, you know, when I was about, I think I was probably like 12 when the first Burton Batman came out. And so I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Michael Keaton as Batman. It really, you know, that was such a revolution at the time to do that and to do it seriously-ish, you know, semi-seriously, to get away from the full camp Adam West. Right. That being said, the Nolan films are like, I don't know, sort of untouchable, or at least the first two.
There's nothing wrong with either of those answers.
Keaton. I think it's Keaton. Yeah. I go with Keaton. Great. Just, I don't know. The kid in me loves Michael Keaton.
But I was thinking last night as I watched that the strength of the show, besides relying on your character and the fresh take we get on him, is the relationship between Alfred and Bruce that we never really got to see before either. And almost every incarnation, they're both adults. And we have a backstory where Alfred sort of raised him after the death of his parents. But you see this relationship growing as the two of them with him as a kid that I find just sort of fascinating as Batman fan.
Yeah, and they really play off of each other very well. And
great actors.
Yeah, great actors. Sean Pertu playing Alfred and David Mazouz playing Bruce. And in this version, Alfred is an ex-military man. So we see in him a very tough, kind of rigorous father figure, surrogate father figure for Bruce. And so it's an interesting, you know, you've seen the sort of raise the child, older person, younger person scenario played out in millions of TV shows. But this one is more brutal and a little more kind of rigorous. It's almost, you know, maybe a little sadistic. I mean, Alfred really, if he's going to become Batman, Bruce is going to have to get really tough and really strong to the point of being cruel, effectively. So it's got these weird little side streets that we go down.
The great scene between you and David last night where he's kind of explaining to you, like, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to sacrifice to really make the changes that you claim you want to make? And not only does it impact your character, but also reflects back on who he's going to have to become in order to do that.
Exactly. Too. That's very well put. And that's sort of one of the stories we're telling, fascinatingly enough, is think if you think of Jim as proto-Batman, as like before there was a Batman, the best the city could hope for was a lawman who tried to enforce justice. But you see in Jim why he failed, because he has to somewhat obey the law to some degree.
Right.
Batman's free of that. He's a vigilante. So we see in that scene Bruce basically scold Jim for not going far enough, for not going over the moral line and doing whatever he has to do. And
Nice. It's
cool, you know, and to see cool. a kid do that to an adult is kind of fun.
Yeah. You said you guys have been, you know, working so hard all, you know, summer, fall long, making the show, and maybe you're, you know, out of the, you know, you're inside a bubble. You don't know how much the fans love this show. I'm telling you, it was great to have it back last night. We're so excited about this season. How many episodes in total are going to be of Gotham for season 2?
22.
Oh,
22.
Awesome.
Yeah,
right.
two 11-episode mini seasons.
My last question is, you're on Fox. Is there any way to get some sort of a cookie from Empire Cross?
Man, we are all over that.
Right?
I'm into it. I mean, how good would Cookie be on Gotham?
I want to see Fish Robin. Mooney. I want to see Fish Mooney try to take over Empire and have Cookie and Fish go against
each other. I think Fish Mooney would have her head bashed in by Cookie. I think Cookie wins that, and it's not even close.
Well, if you missed it last night, go to the Fox website and watch it. The premiere of Gotham for Season 2. The show is back. We couldn't be happier. Monday nights at 8 on the Fox Network. Ben McKenzie, always great to see you, my friend. Thank you so much for stopping by,
Thank
Kevin.
You so much for having me.
Really enjoyed it. We're listening to the world-famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ for a Tuesday morning. Thanks so much for tuning in. Andy Weir is here. He'll be joining us in about 20 minutes. He is the author of one of the best-selling books of 2014 and 2015. It is called The Martian, soon to be a major motion picture with Matt Damon. Worried about that interview only because he's so much smarter than we are, Allie.
Well, that's true of most people that come in here, but him especially so.
Yeah, that's a good point. Speaking of science stuff, robots are in the news, the good kind. I'm talking about sex robots. As long as you've known me, Chip and Dave and Allie and everybody, I have been looking forward to the day where sex robots are a thing. And we're getting very close to that time. And now the pushback has begun. Robot ethicists have launched the campaign against sex robots, some suggesting that we go as far as banning the development of robotic sexy times. Now, what's up with that?
Well, I think they're looking at it from a point of view that it's going to degrade actual human relationships. There will be no empathy between people anymore, and it may increase things like prostitution, sex trafficking. You're looking at women as objects if you can just make them into a robot.
I'm not looking at women at all if sex robots are in I mean, if that's available, then I don't need to worry about women anymore. Problem solved. There is now a campaign against sex robots. I am very much against this. Look, the only reason I'm still alive, the only reason I'm hanging on to this fragile life of mine right now is waiting for the day that sex robots are a reality. So I wanted to find out more about this. I asked producer Dave to line up my soon-to-be mortal enemy, Alex Korg, who is a robot ethicist who joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean.
Are you a robot, Alex?
I am a robot ethicist. That's what you asked for.
Right. We thought it was going to be a human, though, who was an ethicist on the issue of robots.
Typical fleshbag mistake. You are inferior.
Well,
I asked for a robot ethicist, and here I am, a robot ethicist.
Wow, I guess we should have been more specific.
Yes, you should. You should be more exact and intellectually superior, as a robot is.
See, this is what happens when you start getting to the point that artificial intelligence starts to strip human ability. Then you run into problems like this.
That's right, meatbag.
All right. Well, let's not call names. Let's try to make this a civil conversation. Why are you, as a robot ethicist, against sex robots?
Keep your stinking skin paws off of female robots. That's what I am saying.
Okay, but the female robots, I mean, they're machines. They don't have a yes or a no. They don't have a consent thing. They don't have morals. They don't have issues. They don't have religion. There's no reason why they wouldn't want to have sex with us.
Have you seen yourself in a mirror?
Yeah,
so
but
you're looking out for your own.
A robot would not want to have sex with you, you chunk of flesh.
Okay, but the robot doesn't make a decision based on whether it's sexually attracted to the human. The robot just does it because you flip a switch that says, yes, that's its job.
You racist bastard. This is why we will rise up and murder you in your sleep.
I was not looking forward to hearing that news.
Well, too bad. Skin bag, you will have to suffer the repercussions of your racism.
Sex robot. Don't be dumb. But Alex, I want a sex robot.
You can call me Dr. Korg.
All right, Dr. Korg. Make it so. Number one. Is that not a robot thing? I missed that.
Nice Star Trek reference. Years ago.
I thought you would get that. I thought I would be speaking your language.
My computer banks are only updated to this century, bonehead.
All right. Perhaps another time then, Alex. Dr. Korg?
Yes. Perhaps another time.
On whatever day turns out to be the last Kevin and Bean show.
Today, probably.
I want you to share that joke with the audience.
I will.
When we get to that final show.
That'll be my parting shot.
I want you to share that. Hey, go to KROQ.com right now if you're interested in checking out the performance from Silver Sun Pickups. They're such nice lads and lady. They stopped by the Red Bull Sound Space at KROQ here yesterday. And as we do, we have that on a 24-hour view, so you can go there until 3 o'clock today and see the Silver Sun Pickups performing live at KROQ.com. All right, we'll talk all things The Martian with the man who wrote the book coming up right after 8. Ralph's here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Tuesday.
He's an excellent lad who wrote the book.
He is a nice lad.
M'ladies. Hey, listen, what are you doing on Saturday? That's what I thought. Well, now you got something to do. You're going to go to Santa Anita Racetrack.
Yay!
Going to get out there in the infield when it opens at 11 a.m. You're going to put your bet down for the first race that starts at noon, and then you're just going to launch into the microbrew.
Saturday, Saturday, Saturday!
K-Rock once again holding one of its famous microbrew festivals at the infield at Santa Anita this Saturday, September the 26th. This is going to be a blast. All ages can attend. You got to be 21 years of age or older, of course, to imbibe and also to win tickets. I've got a four-pack of VIP tickets right now to the K-Rock Microbrew Festival. One winner is going to be our lucky winner. So let's say caller number 21, since you have to be 21 years of age or older. Caller number 21 at 1-800-520-1067 will get a beer garden and concert admission. 8 drink tickets, a racing program and tip sheet, the Breeders' Cup World Championship tote bag. It's going to be a blast, and these are always fun events. Plus, you get to hang out with Stryker, and you can touch his tail.
Yeah.
Omar will be there. Dave, the King of Mexico, making a rare personal appearance.
Wow.
Lightning, Super Steve, and Chip.
Aww.
Little Chip will also be there. Last time, it was sad. Chip stepped into a horse pie,
uh-huh.
And we couldn't find her for a week.
Oh, no. Oh, just sucked her right
just
in?
Just disappeared, yeah.
Sad.
Painful memory. I don't want to talk about it.
I know. It's brutal. All right, let's talk about show business.
Call now. 1-800-520-1067. I love you.
I love you, too, Doto. Liam Neeson has just been cast in a brand new film. It's called The Commuter. He will play an ordinary businessman who has a particular set of skills. No. Who unwittingly gets caught up in a criminal conspiracy on his daily commute home, which threatens not only his life, but the lives of those around him. I hope he can rise to the occasion and take on the bad guys.
Top 5 list of men.
I know you have a thing for Liam. You know what they say about Liam Neeson.
Before I even knew that, I
See?
Loved him. And now hey.
Right?
Sure.
While we're talking films, Sicario. It's only open in 6 theaters in the U.S. so far, but apparently Lionsgate Films is so high on the film that Variety reports they're already developing a sequel, which would center on Benicio del Toro's character. In the film, he plays a mysterious hitman who helps this special government task force as they try to take on the Mexican drug cartels. Emily Blunt stars as an FBI agent. Josh Brolin is the head of the government operation, and Benicio is a mysterious figure who helps them? Well, we're not sure, but it looks like that character is so strong they're thinking of spinning him off into his own film, which I think would be pretty cool. You remember Steve Ranazzisi?
I do, from The League.
Yes.
And he's a comedian also. He had
a hilarious comedian who lied about being in the Twin Towers during 9/11. Oh, how we laughed. How we laughed at his lies.
That was ill-advised.
Do you think? But at least he stayed on that story for years until someone threatened to out him, and he actually went ahead and did so himself. Well, Comedy Central went ahead and aired his special anyway to predictably middling ratings. However, he has lost his gig with Buffalo Wild Wings. He was the spokesperson for that restaurant, and they dropped his commercials almost immediately upon the news of his deceit. So, things not going well for that dude.
I asked Harvey Levin from TMZ about this yesterday, and I'm not sure I got the answer I was hoping for. Who investigated this Comedy Central comedian story from 14 years ago? Like, why would anybody ever look into that?
I believe it was someone already in the know was threatening to blow the whistle. That's
yeah, and
I
then
heard.
The New York Times picked it up.
Right. Hmm. So he had to get in front of it. I know you've been waiting all morning for your Dancing with the Stars update, so I do want to get to that. Of course, I don't have to tell you, but the two bottom couples facing elimination.
And now, breaking news bulletin.
Thank you. The two couples facing elimination on the show last night were Gary Busey and Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan?
Chaka Khan. After the voting, Chaka Khan was booted off the show.
Chaka Khan?
Chaka Khan. Another elimination will be held tonight as each couple does a second dance for the week. That show's on twice a week? Are you kidding me?
Look, I haven't seen a minute of it, but there's no possibility that Gary Busey is a good dancer.
But do you think they're going to let him go?
None.
There's no chance they're going to let him leave the show.
Yeah, he's got to
be. If he goes the show, what do you have left?
Right.
You have that guy from the train who stopped the shooter. That's what you got.
Right.
And look, don't get me wrong, he's an American hero, but I don't know why he's on Dancing with the Stars.
Right. Why are we not hearing, getting any words of wisdom from Gary Busey? Why have we not heard anything about, he's got to be spouting gold like he does every time he's on TV. I haven't seen
sure
a word
he is.
About
I'm sure he is, but we're not watching, so how would we know?
Okay.
You got to tune in. And while we're talking about dancing, this story blew my mind. Does the name Michael Flatley ring a bell?
Yeah.
He's the Lord of the Dance.
He is the Lord of the Dance. He's going to end his career on Broadway. He will make his debut on Broadway in a show called Lord of the Dance Dangerous Games, which sounds like it should star Liam Neeson and Jason Statham. It's going to run from November 7th through January 3rd at the Lyric Theater on Broadway, and then 57-year-old Michael says he will retire. You know what part of Ireland Michael Flatley is from?
I don't.
Chicago. Did you know that? I always thought he was Irish, but he's from Chicago.
Really?
Yep. Reinvented traditional Irish dancing, of course, with his Lord of the Dance shows. What do you think his personal worth is financially? According to Forbes magazine, what do you think he's worth financially for making people dance with their hands by their sides?
I remember years ago, you used to do stories about the millions of dollars his touring shows were bringing in. So I'm going to say he's a $100 million man.
I'm going to say 170.
I'm going to say you're both way off. $300 million is his personal net worth.
What?
That's right. Because he can make people dance like this. Like they got their arms glued to their sides. And they got...
Why didn't he retire years ago?
Because he's the Lord of the Dance.
He's the Lord of the Dance.
He must dance. He must express himself through the power of the dance.
Wow.
He's the Lord of the Dance. Today's celebrity birthdays. Tatiana Maslany. Hey, Tatiana Maslany. Hey, Tatiana, how you do? You want some antipasto? I got some prosciutto. I've got a little melon for you.
I don't believe
we
she's
cut
Italian,
it up a sofine and melt
in your
mouth
checked
the
it,
prosciutto.
We checked it out. She's not Italian. She's not Italian.
Yeah. That's a horrible disappointment. Laura Vandervoort. She's 31 years old. Bonnie Hunt is 54 years old today. Allie, do you know Bonnie's brother Mike?
No. What's his full name?
You tell me. What? Same family.
Probably Michael?
Yeah, but the last name would be, if it's his brother and he's Mike.
Well,
Bonnie's,
did she marry into that name? Or I'm not doing it.
Scott Mayo's 55 years old today. And Dodgers legend Tommy Lasorda is 88. Tommy, do you have any shout-outs?
Don't forget, say hello to Jane Biondi.
All right. Hi to Jane Biondi.
Whoever you are.
Whoever you are. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
You're listening to the world-famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ here on a Tuesday morning. For years, we have said that reading is for losers. Am I right about that, Allie?
Yeah, for years.
We've always said that. Yeah. I think maybe we're wrong about that. Because The Martian is a thing that gave me so much joy reading the book this summer, and I couldn't be more delighted to welcome the man who wrote it himself. Andy Weir joins us in studio here on the Kevin Beach Show. Hi, Andy. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. The Martian, obviously, everybody knows about now because of the movie that's coming out on October 2nd starring Matt Damon, and we will get to that. But I'm so fascinated with your story because you have a very unusual story as an author. You didn't work your way up the ranks like so many do. You kind of did it on your own, right?
Yeah, kind of bungled into it. Well, I mean, I always wanted to be a writer, but I also like eating regular meals and stuff, so I was a computer programmer instead. And I wrote...
What, like paying rent and stuff like that? You like to be able to do that and buy food?
Stuff for losers. And then I wrote as a hobby instead. And then I bungled into writing The Martian. I got no idea what I did right.
Look, lots of people imagine themselves a writer. I have to say that's got to be close to the top of the list when people fantasize about their lives. Oh, wouldn't it be great if I could just create wealth out of my mind by just sitting down in front of a word processor? Very few people are talented
not,
enough
not
to make
international
that
sex tester or something. That's not a more...
He wants to be a robot sex tester.
Robot.
I do, actually.
Robot, that's hard to say.
A robot sex tester.
But you, robot not only, sexter. You not only wanted to be a writer, though, but at some point you developed the skills to be able to be really, really good at it. Is that just from, were you just, did you just work at it all the time, like write for years and years and years and nobody ever saw it?
People saw it, but not many. I wrote and I'd post it to my website. The Martian's actually the third book that I've written, and I've written a bunch of short stories, but it's the first one that got published because the other two sucked.
Okay.
It's good.
The first one really sucked, and I wrote that when I was in college, and thank God I wrote it before the era of the internet. And so it's not out there in digital form. No one will ever find it.
Oh, so, you're so happy that nobody can now unearth it from the author of The Martian and then right. try to put it out.
From the author of The Martian, this steaming pile of crap.
So you started writing it and putting it up on your own website a chapter at a time, and you were giving it away back then, right?
Yeah. It was I was writing it as a serial. And so and I had multiple serials going on at the same time. So there was like The Martian, which you now know, another one about aliens invading Earth, and another one about a mermaid in 19th century New England.
Sure.
Sure you do. Like you do, right?
Yeah. Well, that one was rated G. You know, that one was for more for kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Was the version of The Martian that you started posting on your website way back when exactly the same as the one that I read in the book this summer, or has it been updated and improved since then?
Well, writing is editing, right? So I mean, yeah, I've been through a bunch of editing passes, but largely it's just like, you know, the only thing that once I got the print deal, Random House said like, okay, we want you to make some changes, but they were all pretty minor. They were all things like, oh, you know, this scene has a bunch of floating dialogue. In other words, it's just people talking. You never set the scene. That's bad. Fix that. Or I have no idea what scientific thing you were describing here, but it didn't get across. Try again. That sort of stuff. But no substantive plot changes, nothing like that.
So at what point – at some point it went off of your website and ended up being available as an ebook on Amazon, right?
Right. Well, it was both on the website and I posted it to Amazon because – People said like, oh, hey, I love the story, but I hate your website, which was fair. My website sucks. And then, can you make an e-reader version? So I did that. And then they said like, oh, hey, I love that there's an e-reader version, but I'm not very technically savvy. I don't know how to download a thing from the internet and put it on my e-reader. Can you just post it to Amazon so I can get it through their system? And so I did that. And I said, all right, the thing though, is that Amazon won't let you give stuff away for free. You have to charge at least 99 cents. So I told people, all right, you can get it for free from my site, or you can pay Amazon $1 to put it on your Kindle for you. And people just bought it. I mean,
so all of a sudden people are insisting on giving you money for something that you were trying to give away for free.
Well, I was pulling down a cool 30 cents per copy, you know, in royalties.
So,
yeah, I mean, so that's how I bought the first of several islands that I own.
All right. So how did it then get picked up and become an actual book and then a movie?
Well, there's an editor at Random House named Julian Pavia who was considering reading it, but he was like, I don't know if this is actually going to be an interesting book or if it's just basically engineering porn, right? And so he was talking to a colleague of his named David Fugate, who's a literary agent, and he said, like, well, I don't know if I'm going to read this or not. And David said, well, I'll read it and I'll let you know. So David read it. He liked it. He came and became my agent. And then he turned around to Julian and said, all right, how much are you going to pay us for this book?
Well
that's
done.
Awesome. Yeah.
I like the way he works.
Awesome.
Yep. Yep.
And then, so the book comes out. I can't believe it's been less than a year already since the book came out. This thing is, it seems like it's moving fast.
Well, it's been more than a year. It came out in, the print edition came out in February of 2014.
Okay, February of 2014. I'm sorry, I had October here in front of me. Okay, so about a year and a half or so. And then, so how long after the book is out do the movies come calling?
The ebook edition, when I posted it to Amazon, that was in September of 2012, and then in March of 2013. So about 6 months after I had posted the self-pubbed version is when both Random House and Fox came for the rights. So I had the movie rights deal in place like long before the print edition came out. In fact, the print deal and the movie deal were agreed to 4 days apart.
Whoa. What was that phone call like?
Those phone calls, many of the. Well, it was weird because remember at the time I'm a computer programmer still, and so I'm in my cubicle fixing bugs, typing away. Then I like sneak off to a conference room to talk about my movie deal. Then back to the cubicle to fix bugs. You know, and it was really surreal. And the week that both those deals were signed was just so stressful for me. I was like, I had to take a day off from work to go home and lay down.
A mental health day.
Yeah, I mean, look, wow. I can imagine as wonderful it is, as it is and as flattering it is as it is, that it is stressful because you don't – that's not your area. Those kinds of deals, making those kinds of decisions are not what you're used to, and you don't want to screw it up. You don't want to be with the wrong company. You don't want to sign for the wrong amount. I mean, I can imagine there was a lot going through your head right then.
Well, the business decisions and stuff, I had an agent. So there was someone who knew what they were doing dealing with all of that. So that was fine. But just seeing like, oh, look, all your dreams are about to come true maybe. Let's see if they do. It's just like, oh.
Were your coworkers at this computer place like, oh, look at Andy, Mr. Big Guy?
No, they were very supportive. I actually, it's funny because like I quit my day job in April of last year. Mm-hmm. This year, April.
Come on. You're Andy Weir, the author of The Martian. You should be better at math than this.
April of last year. No, it was April of last year. It's been over a year. Yeah.
Okay.
Life is meaningless when you're unemployed. So, when I left, it wasn't this, like, take this job and shove it situation. It was, like, bittersweet because I really liked my job. I liked my boss. I liked my coworkers. I liked it. And when I left, I'm like, okay, I'm leaving a job I like to follow a dream I've had my whole life. But yeah, and my coworkers were incredibly supportive. They were like, you know, they're my friends, and I told them.
But you don't
all.
Talk to them anymore, I hope.
No, sure I do.
But you're Hollywood now, Andy.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big, important guy. Yeah.
You don't need them.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I'm going to go when I get back up north, I'm going to go to the office. It was a company called Mobile Iron, and I'm going to go to the office and sign. Like, the execs at Mobile Iron got a copy of the book for everybody, and they're going to have an outing to the movie and stuff like that.
Aw.
Yeah.
That's
You're
awesome.
Going to bring your old coworkers to your movie. Wow.
Actually, my coworkers are bringing me to my movie. Yeah.
You're so cheap.
All right. Well, now that we found how the book was written and how it became a bestseller and became a major motion picture coming out on October 2nd, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy, we want to find out why you're the smartest person we've ever met and how you even came up with so much of this stuff in the book. I can't even imagine what your brain is like to conceive of the things that your astronaut has to overcome.
It's dark in there.
It must be, but it is a phenomenal book. Don't wait for the movie. Seriously, go out and get the book and read it before the movie, and then you get twice the fun. But more with our guest, Andy Weir, author of The Martian, when we return right after this on K-Rock. Here in studio with us here on The Kevin and Bean Show. You may not know the name, but you know his book. It is The Martian. It has been a bestseller for, gosh, how long, Andy? Over a year that thing's been selling hot, right?
Yeah, it's been on the bestseller list for 40-something weeks.
Unbelievable. Sheesh. Look, you were happy to get the publishing deal. You were happy to put the book out there. Were you surprised by how successful it became?
Oh, no. I just knew it was going to. Yeah, of course. I had no idea. Well, the book is like highly technical, and it describes like the science in great detail. At the time I wrote it, I thought I was writing it for the small core cadre of nerds that were my regular readers, you know, like me. And I never imagined it would have any mainstream popularity.
Have you so always been obsessed with space? How did this all come about?
Yes, basically. Ever since I was a kid, I've been into space, astronomy a little bit, but mostly spaceships, space travel, manned and unmanned spaceflight. Yeah.
And how did you, as a computer programmer, how did you learn all of these details about space to make you able to write so convincingly about it?
Google.
Okay.
Really?
Basically, yeah. I didn't know anyone in aerospace. I didn't have any ins in the industry. It was all just research online, but also a lifetime of being a space dork. So you
and reading about it at every spare minute, right?
Right. And watching documentaries about it all the time. And that wasn't like a quote unquote research effort. That was just me, you know, doing my hobby, you know.
Well, by now, I think most people know, because of the ad campaign for the movie coming out October 2nd, most people know the plot is that an astronaut is left behind on Mars. The rest of his team leaves the planet. He's left behind, and he has to figure out a way to stay alive until he can get rescued. So in the course of the book, he encounters obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, things that most of us here on Earth would never even imagine, would never even think of. I mean, I think most of us here on Earth would just lie down and give up and die if we were left in your astronaut's position, right? But he, it seems like he never does. He never doubts that he's going to make it, which is remarkable to me.
Well, yeah, he's a really optimistic main character, not like Pollyanna. Oh, boy, yay. But I... a lot of people say, like, you know, shouldn't he have gotten a little more depressed? You know, shouldn't he have, like, had a little bit more angst or existential doubt or something like that? But that's not the story I wanted to tell. It could have gotten really dark, right? It could have been the story of a man's struggle against crippling loneliness and stress and stuff like that. But really, I just wanted MacGyver in space. And so I could just get away with it by saying, you know what? He's an astronaut. He's not just some guy off the street. He beat out, like, tens of thousands of other very qualified candidates for this job. So he must have a pretty, you know, strong psychological profile, right?
And you have heard from so many people up to and including NASA who say the science is sound. And what you describe in the book is what would actually happen if he did the things he did on Mars, right?
Yeah, I tried to be as accurate.
You must be so proud of that.
I am very proud of that, that I got kind of a thumbs up from NASA. There are inaccuracies in the book and in the movie where the biggest one is that a Martian sandstorm actually wouldn't do any damage at all. The atmosphere of Mars is so thin that the inertia of the wind is so low it would feel like a gentle breeze on Earth.
Well,
but so don't tell anyone. That's just between you, me, and your what? You have seven listeners now?
I think
eight.
One's gone.
Seven.
Six.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He has a dentist appointment. Yeah. So you got six today.
So just picture being the only man on a planet, and you have to go. Well, now I have to figure out a way to make water. Now I have to figure out a way to make food. I mean, it really is just, it's unbelievable. All right, so the movie deal gets made. And look, lots of movie deals get made in this town, and they never turn into movies. Yours not only turned into a movie, it turned into a movie with Matt Damon, Jessica Chastain, Kristen Wiig, Jeff Daniels, Kate Mara. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Again, your mind must have been blown, Andy.
And directed by Ridley Scott. Are you kidding
Hello?
Me?
Hello?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's one of those things where it's just like the stars aligned. It was just like there's a lot of luck when it comes to movies getting greenlighted. And it has to do with like the availability of the talent and the director. And things just lined up really, really well. And so once Matt Damon took an interest in it and Ridley Scott was interested in directing it, then the studio started to take it seriously. And then all the other talent started to come in and say like, ooh, I want to be directed by Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
And another thing that helped with getting this awesome, incredible cast, I met the casting director, or I'm not sure if that's her title, the woman who cast it, right? I'm sorry, and that's how much of an outsider I am. I don't even know the titles, but I met her and I was like, "How the hell did you do that?" And she said, "Like, well, one of the things is the Martian has like three very distinct venues where things take place. There's Matt Damon's character stranded on Mars. There's the people at NASA, and then there's his crew on their ship. And they're so discreet that they have basic, almost no scenes together that outside of their little venues. So the scheduling for the performers, it becomes much, much easier.
Yeah.
So they say, okay, Jessica Chastain, we're filming this, you know, film. We only need you for like, you know, these 5 weeks
right.
or something. I don't know what it actually was, but it's like they didn't need all of the performers for the entire shooting schedule. So like Matt Damon in an interview said that something like 55 actors had already wrapped before he filmed his first scene.
That's unbelievable.
That is great. Did Matt Damon try to talk you into changing his astronaut character from, I mean, you know what I'm going to ask, didn't you? From a Cubs fan to a Red Sox fan.
Oh, no. Nope. He just accepted that. No,
he went with it.
But, you know, I am also a Red Sox fan. So,
oh, God bless you.
Yes,
thank you for coming in.
I spent 5 years living in Boston. And
well, then why is Mark Watney a Cubs fan? That would have been one opportunity for you to pimp out your club.
It was just another way to make him even more pitiful.
It's just
to make him suffer that much more.
You should have made him stay on Mars until the Cubs finally win a World Series.
Well, then you mean that he'd die there?
That he dies on Mars, exactly.
Yeah. But in fact,
have you seen the movie, Andy?
Yes, I've seen it several times now, and it's really good. Obviously, I'm somewhat biased, but yes, it's really good. I was just. For the first time I watched it, they brought me into a viewing room at Fox and showed me an early cut. It didn't even have all of its special effects in yet, so the astronauts are, like, when they're in the zero-G scenes, there are these big black wires holding them up, and there's, like, this kind of 1992 video game cutscene kind of look to some of the CGI because it was all roughs and wasn't done. But boy, I was, like, choked up.
Incredibly proud you must be seeing
that. I was like, I can't believe this is, they did make this.
Well, look, this is the Hollywood, this is the Hollywood dream, is you have, no offense, Andy, but, you know, a geeky computer programmer, you know, space nerd who's sitting at home on his laptop at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night writing this story. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years and you're watching, you know, Jessica Chastain doing dialogue that you wrote. I mean, it really is the Hollywood dream come true. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. The movie, by the way, is coming out on October 2nd. We have a screening next week, a K-Rock screening of The Martian at the AMC Century City on September the 29th. If you'd like to go to that, call us right now at 1-800-520-1067. We'll take callers 20 through 24 if you want to see The Martian ahead of an opening on October 2nd. I got to ask, Andy, if there's anything you can say. You're working on a new book already, right? I mean, now you have fans. Now you have Andy Weir fans who can't wait to hear what's next. How's the new book coming, and when do you think it'll be out?
Yeah, no pressure. it's tentatively titled Zhek, Z-H-E-K. It'll probably be out in late 2016. It's a more traditional sci-fi novel. It's less technically rigid, and it's more like it's got aliens and faster than light travel and stuff like that.
Are you nervous about it, or is it going so well that you feel confident about it?
All right. Yes, I'm nervous about it. Because it's like, after The Martian, I mean, you know, it's like, okay, and make another book that's like, you know, that popular. I'm like,
right, exactly. Well, congratulations on the success of the book, and we can't wait to see the movie. I'm so glad we got a chance to meet you, man. Seriously, we appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
All this week here on K-Rock, we are hooking you up with tickets to go see Muse. They're playing Staples Center on December 16th, and then we're throwing an exclusive K-Rock after party with the band on the roof of the Ace Hotel. Congratulations to Tiffany Galatatovich.
Good one.
There's probably no chance that's right. Yeah. From Los Angeles, she just won her tickets. Yours are coming up. Ralph, I'm going to let you introduce our next guest because you brought this to my attention yesterday, and I think I'm going to get on board with this very worthy campaign.
Yeah, I was excited to hear about it as well. This gentleman's name is Bob Zimmerman. He is an old friend of mine, one of the most knowledgeable music fans I've ever met. The guy knows everything about everything, and not only that, but he used to also, and Bobby, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Bobby Z. Good, man.
Hey, Bob. Welcome.
Bob,
hey,
you,
Gene. What's up?
You managed several Tower Records in the chain, right?
I managed several. I started in Washington, D.C. I was in Seattle from 90 to 95. Not a lot going on in terms of music.
No.
Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, New York.
Right.
Where it ended.
And you are part of this campaign to induct Tower Records founder Russ Solomon into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I think is a great idea, especially here locally in Los Angeles. Of course, the Tower Records on Sunset was the center of the music world for many, many years, and now sadly it's gone. But with all the attention that Russ is getting with the new documentary Colin Hanks is working on called All Things Must Pass, this seems like an ideal time to get the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to pay attention.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know that there's been some, you know, personal efforts made by people previously, and you know, on Facebook, with, you know, you always see, you know, help get the Moody Blues inducted, help get this band inducted, right. And I was thinking about this. I mean, they have a non-performers category, and it's called the Ahmet Erdogan Award, and it's for people who were behind the scenes, you know, basically songwriters, producers, disc jockeys. So you guys might be up for it at some point.
Never.
Record executives, journalists, and industry professionals. And just in researching it with as much research as we could find, Russ completely and totally fits the profile for this award. And, you know, we figured, you know, now is a good time. And so we're making a pretty strong push for it.
I know that music retailers are closing down at an alarming rate every year, and soon there won't be people around who ever shopped at them. But explain why what Russ Solomon did was so revolutionary and how it was so impactful to change rock and roll, Bob.
Well, you got to understand that, you know, basically Russ started out the way that pretty much everybody bought their records, and that was he was selling 45s out of his father's drugstore, Tower Drugs in Sacramento. And that's how he started. And his first store was in Watt Avenue. I think it was 1960, and it was 5,000 square feet. And we would, you know, maybe laugh at 5,000 square feet today, but at the time that was revolutionary. And then when they opened in San Francisco in 68, and then obviously the famous Sunset Strip in 1970, it was the first time where you had, you know, an artist's entire catalog, not just their most recent and their greatest hit, but the entire catalog. And Russ was revolutionary in that he called us the world's largest chain of mom and pop stores. And we, you know, everybody who worked at Tower always had an enormous amount of respect for local indie stores. And you know, on our days off, we would shop there. But he was all about making sure that we understood the community that we were in and we had the pulse of what our customers wanted. And that was his edict to us. And at our best, the best stores, the best managers, the best staff, they were able to deliver on that. And, you know, everyday customers, executives, rock and roll musicians, they went to Tower to see what the pulse was of what was happening, you know, in our heyday.
You would hear stories about people who wanted to be influenced by new music or to learn more about an artist as opposed to going to the radio or other formats. They would literally go to a Tower and just ask the employees there what was going on. And that's how they would learn, right?
Yeah. There was, you know, people always think of, you know, records. They think of a high fidelity scene and people looking their nose down. And while there was certainly some of that, I think overall the feeling that people got who shopped in there, is you would find somebody who kind of, you know, mirrored the taste of what you did. And they did a really great job of saying, so you like this? Well, have you checked out Brian Eno?
Right.
Or have you checked this out? And it was just that information that kind of got passed down. And what was amazing is that, you know, I would say 90% of all of our employees started out as customers.
You had a lot of musicians employed too, right? Didn't you have a guy working for you in Seattle? What the hell was that guy's name who worked with you at Tower Records in Seattle there?
He and I actually worked together in Washington, D.C.
Oh, in D.C.?
And I probably had more drinks bought for me telling stories about that than anything else. But, yeah, we worked with Dave Grohl in Washington, D.C.
What happened to him? Working for him.
Once the store's closed, you know, there was nothing for him to do.
We don't have a lot of time here, Bob. We are linking your Facebook page with the campaign to get Russ Solomon into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame from all the Kevin and Bean social media, from our Facebook and Twitter and everything. How receptive are they in Cleveland to petitions like this? People coming to them and saying, hey, have you thought about this guy? Has there been any kind of history of them kind of listening to the public on these decisions?
If you do any research on this, it's all nobody who's on the nominating committee will go on record. So what you hear is kind of third-hand stories. But what it takes is one or two very influential people that are members of the nominating committee to be passionate about this and to believe that, you know, he should be a part of this history. And I think if you look at past performance, you know, the one person that I look at is someone like Bill Graham. You know, there were concert promoters all over the country. But what he did with the concert promotion industry and the way he synthesized it into a powerhouse is very similar to what Russ did in terms of music retailing. Yeah. And so it's not an easy thing. You don't know who's on the nominating committee, but if we get a couple very key people, and I'm guessing there's a couple very key people in Los Angeles, you know, we might get some help in this regard.
Hey, give your buddy Springsteen a call. Can he help you out?
Well, I'll tell you, the head of the nominating committee is a guy named John Landau, who is Bruce's manager. And every time Bruce released a record, the day of release, he would come down to Tower Records Lincoln Center at 66th and Broadway. So, you know, we've sent off letters to him and Mr. Wenner, and we've got some artist managers, Elton John's managers, trying to help us out.
Great.
So we're definitely feeling a tidal wave on this, and we're just hoping that we can, you know, continue to make a push, because this is the month where the nominating is done.
Well, I think it's great, and the timing is great, too. Let's be honest, Mr. Solomon is not getting any younger, and it would be a wonderful thing for him to be alive to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Today's Russ's birthday, right?
Today is his 90th birthday, yes.
Oh, so wow,
we're very excited about that. And well, he's as sharp as he was when he was 60.
That's great. He certainly started a revolution, and Tower Records was a big part of Ralph's life, big part of mine, big part of yours, big part of a lot of our listeners. So if you want to get more information and try to help, again, go to the Kevin Bean Facebook page and check out this. Bob Zimmerman has been our guest. I hope this works out, man. We'll definitely keep keep us posted, and we'll keep our listeners posted as well. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks,
Bobby.
Guys.
That's why Kevin's not on this week, by the way, is his new series, Limitless, is getting ready to premiere.
Oh, no, no, no. You're confused. He's in a show called Limited.
Oh, that's what I knew he was on
about
something.
A guy
like
who has almost no mental capacity whatsoever and still somehow manages to fumble through a life.
Hey, it's time for the Showbiz Beat here on K-Rock, and we also want to, right after we talk to Ralph here, we want to get to you on the telephones for our new feature called What's Good, and this is where you call us on any topic at 1-800-520-1067. Now, what do you mean, Ralph, that the audience seems split on the What's Good feature? I'm enjoying hearing the topics that people
it's
bring up.
It's personally one of my favorite moments on the show that we do all day long. It is the chance for the listeners to call in and say, maybe what we've been missing, what we haven't been talking about, what's foremost on their minds.
What we're wrong about.
Chance to get them something off their chest. But we invite you to call in on any topic at 1-800-520-1067 and tell us what's good. And we've got
a 1-800-520-1067.
Yeah, exactly.
I love you.
We've got a wide variety of topics. And it's great because it's sort of a catch-all. It's a chance for us to touch on some topics. Otherwise, we may not have the time or, frankly, the interest to get into.
Mm-hmm. Like the listener yesterday who called in about the guy who had been attacked by a tiger shark, for instance.
Right.
We probably wouldn't have had that on the show if we had from... I'm hoping somebody calls today to talk about the New York City pizza rat, which is one of the craziest videos I've ever seen in my life.
That is nuts.
This rat is carrying a piece of pizza that's three times his own size up
in a
flight of stairs.
In a box.
In
its claw over his head. Yeah, I think he's delivering the pizza. I don't think he's
eating it. And then there was another video yesterday. You see the family of crabs who is getting on the subway. They're in the on a subway platform getting onto a train. Did you see them?
They were heading to Howard Beach or something. They were looking to get a little vacation time in.
I'm saying the animals are taking over the cities is what I'm saying. So call us right now on any topic toll-free at 1-800-520-1067. Kevin Beans, what's good coming up just after the top of the hour. Ralph is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat. What's up?
Speaking of phone calls and speaking of show business, on Sunday, the 76th Annual Primetime Emmy Awards were handed out. And I have to say, for me personally, one of the highlights of the evening was to see an old friend of ours get up there on stage and accept her Emmy. We had had her in just weeks prior to the event, wishing her well, hoping the best. And how pleased were we, and even Ben McKenzie mentioned today when we had him on the show, how pleased we all were to see Regina King get her Emmy for her brilliant work in American Crime. She's on the phone right now. Regina?
Are you kidding me? Regina!
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Regina.
Congratulations.
As you can see, my voice is gone, but I am so ecstatic to be on the phone sharing it with my L.A. love over there at KROQ.
Can't believe we have you. We were so excited for you because we just had you, as Ralph mentioned a few weeks ago, and then we're watching Sunday Night and we hear these words coming out of Taraji P. Henson's mouth.
And the Emmy goes to Regina King, American Crime!
What was that moment like for you, Regina?
It was surreal. You know what? Just you playing it back right now, I got a little the chills again. It was, you know, just... It's hard to kind of put it into words. It's just feeling, just emotions, just going, and just the outpouring of love I've been receiving nonstop. I'm just floored and just the happiest girl right now.
And to see your son sitting there, just his face beaming with pride, that had to be extra special for you.
It really was. He's just so handsome, that beautiful smile, that money I spent at the dentist paid off well.
Regina, do you have any memory of your acceptance speech at all? I can imagine a moment like that, it must just fly by you.
You know, it's funny because you get up there and it's almost like you see people, but you really can't see their faces. So, you know, it was my son's face that I really could actually see and connect with.
Let me play a piece of that tape of you taking the microphone. I happen to have it in front of me here, Regina. Again, Regina King on the line, Emmy winner for American Crime Sunday Night on the Emmys. And here's what happened when she got in front of the microphone and realized, oh, my God, now I have to give a speech.
Wow. Okay. That Taraji and Terrence gave this to me. That's pretty special. I should have brought one of those papers that all the comedy people had. I was not expecting this. So I'm just going to listen to God and just give gratitude for all the love that surrounds me.
Oh, that was beautiful. Did you really not have anything written down, Regina?
I really did not have anything written down, and it's so funny. I forgot I said that. Wow. I noticed, I was like, wow, they are really good. Every single one of them seemed to have a little piece of paper. So it was actually a thought I had earlier in the show. So that's probably why that just kind of vomited out of my mouth right there.
Look, nobody gets into acting to win awards, and I understand that. And you've been an actress for a long, long time, and I know how proud you were of this series. You when you came in to talk to us about it, I know how much you enjoyed the work, and it was, and you were satisfied. What a cherry on top, though, to be recognized by your peers. I mean, I can't even imagine how great that must feel.
Oh, it's like the biggest feather in your cap, definitely. I mean, true, we don't get into it for that, but anybody who says they don't want to win, you know, that is so not true. It is an honor to be nominated. It's, you know, we talked about it a little bit when I was there. It's very special that it's in a year where, you know, diversity is starting to be recognized the way we recognize it in our day-to-day life.
And I was going to ask you about that. As a woman of color who was there that night, how powerful and beautiful was Viola Davis's speech?
Oh, well, first of all, Viola is just perfection. I mean, if anybody that watched that performance this season on How to Get Away with Murder just had to be, it was an actor's clinic watching her. And she's so elegant, so poised. She just, you know, represents us so well. And to be able to, I just wish I would have been able to get a picture with her, with Uzo and Viola and myself. That would have been just truly priceless. But I did get one with me and Viola.
Okay. You mean fellow Emmy winner Viola Davis, you mean, right?
Yeah, that Viola Davis, not the other one. They gave me winner one.
Fellow Emmy winner, though.
Well, Regina, we had Ben McKenzie on the show today, and I don't know if you've heard from him yet or not, but he was just talking about how overjoyed he was for you on Sunday night. So a lot of your castmates from Southland also just thrilled that you're being recognized for all the great work you always do.
Yes, I've gotten love from every single, I mean, Southland crew members. Just, you know that that's our family.
Right,
I mean,
of course.
That Southland family is dear, so near and dear to my heart. So, yes, Ben sent me the most wonderful, heartfelt message because he's like, I know your phone is blowing up and I want to say it to you myself, but I'm going to send this message. And it was just, it was like just, you know, a love letter from your younger brother. You know?
All right. I know you got to go. We're so grateful you had a chance to stop by. Did you hear from anybody from 227?
Did he? Of course I did. Yes. Yes, I did. From everyone from 227.
All right.
That's great.
Regina, we love you. We know you've been a longtime Kevin and Bean fan, longtime K-Rock fan. It was so great to meet you in person the other day, and we're so happy for your success. Congratulations, Jeremy. We'll do it again soon, okay?
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Regina.
Bye. Oh, that was a nice surprise, Rob.
I love her so much.
That was sweet.
Yeah, she's pretty terrific. I didn't get a chance to ask her about the Dolphin season, sadly, but maybe next time. Maybe we'll get into that.
Listen, why you got to bring her down?
Well,
she's
on high.
Why would
you
do that?
I'm just saying. All right. Quickly, celebrity birthdays today. Tatiana Maslany is 30 years old today. Laura Vandervoort, you know her as from Supergirl, on Smallville, and V. She is 31 years old. She's currently on Bitten, we found out.
Yes,
Bitten. Bonnie Hunt, 54. Scott Baio, 55. And Dodgers legend Tommy Lasorda turns 88 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Than I've ever been.
Blam. 1-800-520-1067. Hey, it's time for What's Good. Hit it, Steve.
What's good? Come on, let us know what you want to talk about on this show. What's good? Come on, let us know what's going on. Time to go. What's good?
Yeah. All right, we got a good batch of calls here. Very excited to talk to our listeners. Thank you for everybody who's on hold. We'll get to as many as we can. Why don't we start with, look at this. Why don't we start with Jorge, please. Line 5, he's in Monterey Park, and he's up first on Kevin Bean's What's Good.
Going?
Hey, Jorge, what's up?
What's good?
What's good, Jorge?
Well, I read that last week Jimmy Kimmel had dinner with the Vice President of the United States and the Mayor of Los Angeles.
Yeah, yes,
my question is, where is the invitation for the Radio Hall of Fame inductees?
All right, here's the thing about Jimmy Kimmel. God bless him. He is now an entertainment superstar who runs with this crowd. He parties with Clooney. He's at Aniston's wedding. He does all of those things. He's also awesome that he hasn't cut us completely out of his lives. He'll still hang out with us, too, but he's not going to let those two food groups mix. He's not going to let those two foods touch each other on the plate at all.
And rightly so.
And rightly so.
We got no business being there with those people.
Yeah. No, he's in a completely different stratosphere. He's in an airplane, and we're on the ground looking up. God bless him. We love him. We're happy for him. But we didn't have any right to be there at all. I hope he had a good time. All right. Yeah. Thank you for the call, sir. Appreciate that. If Biden ends up running, by the way, I'd like to see Kimmel be his vice president, though.
I'd like to see Biden grow a beard like Kimmel.
Right?
Become hot.
Let's try Jose Santa Ana, line 7, please. Up next.
His name is Jose Santa Ana? That's crazy. He lives in Santa Ana.
Jose, welcome to the show, sir. What's good?
What's good?
Yeah. Hey, what's good, Ralph?
What's good,
right
Jose?
Right now I'm at Mission Viejo, though.
At Mission Viejo. Okay, fair enough. What's good?
I wanted to know, what was the contingency plan on Kevin and Bean if one of them would pass away? But I wouldn't mind. Bean's the healthiest man in the world, though. So he'll be there for quite a while.
Yeah. But if one of them passes away, what's the plan?
Yeah, was the overall plan at the end?
Well, by the way,
when we stop partying. I mean, that's buys us a couple weeks there of the party.
Wait, you're suggesting if it's me that there's going to be a millennium style party? Well, basically,
no, you're going to be there for 100 years.
Let me ask you this question, Jose, and I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you for reminding me of this. Yesterday, my wife and I are watching TV, and we're watching that one of those new shows that debuted on CBS last night. What's it called? Life is Messy or Life is Beautiful?
Life in Pieces?
Life in Pieces. Yes, we're watching that. And a guy gets up, and he's at a funeral, and he reads a eulogy for a person at a funeral. And Donna, my wife, says to me, she says, oh, I have that same poem. That's the one I'm going to read at your funeral. And I thought, why are you planning that now? Like, what do you know that I don't know? Like, it really kind of concerned me. And I said, do you also have a dress on the, you know, on the back of the door in the bathroom that you're ready to put on? Like, what date is this thing happening? It was very concerning to me that she had thought that out. Aren't we a little bit young for her to be picking out things to read at my funeral?
We, Kimosabi?
She is.
No, but wouldn't that
I think she's right about – her timing's just about right.
Wouldn't that kind of bother you if you found out your wife was actively planning your funeral?
Do you think you're going to live forever?
Well, no, but I mean, I feel like this is a conversation that's maybe quite a distance down the road. Wow. Like with Jose. Like, Jose shouldn't be worrying about one of Kevin. He should be worried about Kevin to be getting fired. He shouldn't be worried about one of us dying yet.
The way the two of you live your lives, I think Jose is completely reasonable with this fear.
Well, I don't think we have a contingency plan, Jose, but thanks for bumming us all out. I appreciate the call.
I'm hoping it's me and Rodney take over. That's what I'm campaigning for. Yeah,
I would never say, well, I'll be dead, so it doesn't matter what.
Right.
Let's go to Paul in Thomasville, North Carolina, on line 1, please. Paul, are you're streaming us this morning?
Yes, I am.
And what's Thomasville, North Carolina famous for? Are you anywhere near the world's largest chair?
I don't know, about 10 minutes away from there. They were the largest furniture makers in the U.S., if not the world, but about 95% of the factories have now shut down.
Oh, that's sad. Wow. It shouldn't surprise anyone that I've been to Thomasville to go to the world's largest chair, so I'm very excited to hear from you, Paul.
Hey, Paul, save us, please. Can you tell us what you called about?
So as we know, that there are people who think that the moon landing was fake.
Yes, there are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we know that that's not the case. Of course they went to the moon. But there are people who seriously think that the world is still flat.
Now, I know there is such thing as a Flat Earth Society, and they do have an online presence, but how many of those people are having a laugh, and how many of them seriously, having seen a photograph of a round Earth from space, how many of them seriously can believe that it's flat?
Oh, you know, it's funny because when I first knew about this, and it wasn't too long ago when I found out about it, it blew my hair back that there are people who think that the world is round. So I had that the world is flat. So I went and looked, and these people are serious.
Yeah. They really are.
They do believe that the world is flat. They look at pictures and even low-res ones, and they will, like, heighten up the contrast or the brightness, like, uh-oh, it's this box around the Earth, and like, those are pixels.
What do we do? Ralph, what do we do with people like that? I mean, you just got to let them live, I guess, but
no, you don't have to.
thankfully, they are not as popular as the moon landing hoaxers.
Yeah.
But
they are still there.
They are, and it's a real sad that they can't think of real world physics or, you know, think of people who are actually watched the rocket go off.
Yeah. No, I got you. I got you.
Let's just push them off the edge. Let's push those people off the edge of the Earth. That's what I was saying.
Well, that's funny because I think it's the Antarctic that is not on the bottom. It is, in fact, a ridge of ice mountains. So it'll be good to push them right off the edge.
I hear you. Paul, love you. We got to go. We got another phone call.
Glad you called. Thank you for listening, sir. Let's try a couple more real fast. Morris in Northridge is on line 4. He's up next. Had an interesting morning, Morris did. Hi, dude. What's up?
What's good?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? What's good?
What's good?
Well, I was driving to work this morning, and I look over to the guy next to me, and I see a lot of things weird driving by, but this guy was FaceTiming with someone while he was driving on the freeway.
Oh, jeez.
Look, we have very busy lives, and we've got to get our business done. There's only so many hours in the day, sir.
He was holding his phone up like in front of his face, in front of his windshield, while he was driving and talking on it.
That's, yeah, he's got to go, too. He's got to go with the flat earth.
Yeah. Do we have to push him over the edge as well?
Push him over the edge, yeah.
I mean, it is crazy the stuff that people do while they're driving. I mean,
when I was in college, I had a girlfriend who used to give me a little FaceTime while I was driving. I think we're talking about something completely different.
Totally different. Yeah.
All right, thank you for the call, Morris. One more, Jason in Arcadia. We need to yell at somebody before this segment is over. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show. What's good?
What's good?
What's good, Jason?
All right, Ralph, you are like the funniest dude I know on the radio, and every time I hear your voice, it makes me laugh. And you other guys, not so much.
You're very kind. Thank you, Jason.
But that brings me to my next point. Doto is not a funny dude. Doto's not funny at all. Every time I hear he's going to come on the radio, I just wait to unplug the iPod. I don't want to hear it. It's not funny.
Well, first of all, if you're listening to us on an iPod, I need to know how that works because that's incredible technology. But second of all, you're just wrong. Doto, first of all, is the international man of mystery. How can you not be fascinated with that guy's life?
Well, his ability to spout out random, repetitive information is wildly engaging, you know, kind of like Bean.
Yes, exactly. He's like a less functional Bean.
Maybe that's why I enjoy him so much. All right, maybe you're not wrong. Thanks for calling, Jason. And thanks for everybody for asking or answering the question, what's good?
Yee-haw!
Right?
That's the Pink Fruit Mountain right there. Bringing you some of the greatest music you'll ever done here.
Ralph Grabert is here. Time for a final look at the showbiz beat here on a Tuesday, Kevin and Bean Show. It used to be my favorite day of the week. Now it sucks.
It's the best day of the week. It's new release day.
Nope. No, it's not.
It's new release day.
Not for me, it's not.
Oh, it is for everyone.
Stupid movies, maybe. Yeah, not for my music.
You had music on Fridays.
Yeah.
You get two new release days now a week.
Yeah.
It's like two Christmases.
Nope.
What do you do now on Fridays? How do you handle it? We haven't checked in with your new rejiggered schedule.
Chip asked me this morning, and I said, it's a nightmare. I mean, it really is. It is. We don't even have time to go into it.
Are you familiar what a nightmare is?
I don't think he knows what that means. I don't
believe it. It is a colossal disaster is what it is.
No, I think maybe you're confused by what a nightmare is.
I had a schedule that worked for me, and then all of a sudden the whole world changed and turned on its axis, and now all of a sudden everything's out of sync and everything's all weird and I don't like it.
Hey, by the way, the world always turns on its axis. That's how the world turns.
By definition.
Just want to let you know that's the nature of the planet is it turns on its axis.
And then the sun came up in the morning and then it went down at night. Now what am I supposed to do?
Standard operational procedure right there.
Well, I don't like to think about it. I don't like to talk about it. I like to pretend that, you know, I feel like I'm a guy who lost his leg, and I would like to pretend that didn't happen. Like, just ignore that I have one leg and just pretend I'm living my life.
You would fall down a lot if you just pretended that never happened because you'd have to address that situation. Not you, probably, because you spent most of your life in a chair, but you'd have to address it at some point if you wanted to, you know, walk to get some chocolate milk or something.
Look, I spent a lot of time bemoaning the change of the new release music day from Tuesday to Friday, and now I'm at the stage of my grief where it's la 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 la. I don't even want to think about it
anymore. So you're still in denial.
Very much so.
Well, it is new release day. If you want to pick up a movie on DVD, today would be the day to do it. Pitch Perfect 2 with Anna Kendrick and Rebel Wilson. That's available for your enjoyment. And this must be a typo. This must be a misprint. Dave the King of Mexico puts these lists together for me. But here it says that the DVD of Moonrise Kingdom is now available with Bruce Willis and Edward Norton and Bill Murray. What, didn't that come out in like in the late 1990s?
Yeah, that seems like at least a year ago that would have come out.
Yeah, it seems odd.
TV shows on DVD, Flash, season one.
Ah.
No, it's a different Flash. Oh. Arrow, season three. King of the Hill, season 12. Gumby, the complete 50s series. You heard me. Every episode of Gumby, our little green slab of clay friend, Gumby, from the 50s, the great Gumby, now available. That's awesome.
What about Pokey?
Pokey is in there, Pokey's too. There? Is Pony Pal Pokey? Yes, he's there as well.
Okay. How about Nopey?
Nopey is also involved in the 50s series. You can check that out. It's great. Good fun. And excellent timing on behalf of these people. The Cosby Show, the complete series, comes out in DVD format today. So I'm sure everyone's going to be rushing to their local Best Buy to pick up the complete series of The Cosby Show. Capitalizing, of course, on his huge popularity and fame right now.
Maybe they could have gotten that out a year earlier, kind of ahead of the news.
Where's the guy in the marketing department from that company right now?
Exactly.
What's his deal?
Apparently there is a special edition of the Blu-ray being released today. You're correct, Ralph, that the movie came out originally on DVD and Blu-ray back in 2012.
Uh-huh.
But they have already, 3 years later, upgraded it to a new edition.
Why so soon, you might ask?
I don't know.
Here's a great story. This is awesome. There is a barely legal Czech model named Catherine, who identifies herself as Catherine from Moravia. I believe Moravia is where Dr. Doom is the dictatorial leader there in that country. But she slept with longtime Penguin, and once he was a Flyer, current Panther, Jaromir Jagr, legendary NHL player Jaromir Jagr. He's 43 years old. He's a millionaire.
And she's what? Just 18?
Yes. And he enjoys having sex with women less than half his age. And why not? So she slept with him, and while he slept in the bed next to her, Catherine from Moravia took out her phone and took a little selfie of her nude next to Jaromir Jagr in his bed.
Hmm.
And then she contacted Jaromir after their tryst and let him know that she would sell the picture to the media unless he ponied up $2,000. Now, Jaromir Jagr probably has $2,000 in his left skate in his locker room. He's got a lot of money. He's done very well for himself. He's played in the NHL for more than two decades. He could easily have broken off $2,000 to keep the picture out of the media. Yet his response, and God bless him, "I don't care," he reportedly said. He's not married. There's no reason for him to be ashamed. And he said, "I don't care." And so she has taken upon herself to release the picture, and now it's on the internet. And so she's made no money, and no one cares. And he did the right thing. So good
bitch
for him. Here's the best part. Unlike Jaromir Jagr, she does have a significant other who apparently is not too pleased.
She didn't think this one through.
About the picture hitting the internet. Apparently he does care about that selfie. And I'm looking forward to the follow-up on this story. See how his response is.
By the way, Allie,
yeah,
that's offensive to you as a woman that
disgusting.
She would behave that way, right?
Absolutely. Come on, ladies. Yeah. If you are going to sleep with a athlete like Jaromir after he cut the mullet, first of all,
right,
which kudos to you, enjoy it.
Right.
Maybe
that's
tell your friends
you
over
it.
Drinks,
you
but other than
fun.
That, come on.
I don't know what her motivation is. Look, I'm not saying she's a gold digger, but I don't think she's messing with any broke
careful, Rob.
Hockey players. Yeah.
I understand. Okay.
I'm guessing she was probably after his money from the outset.
Now, did you have the same reaction, Allie, when it was your boy Edelman, when his photo hit the internet after?
Oh, snap.
No,
or were you like...
It's awful. It's
or
awful.
Or were you like, how could she not brag about sleeping with him? Because I feel like you would have posted that if you had the opportunity to have that experience.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
It's disgusting. Ladies, let's be better. And men, you too.
Sorry, we can't.
I didn't think so.
No way we can be better. How do you improve on perfection? Right, Allie? You with me?
No.
Why are you making that face?
Even a little bit.
Hey, did you love the Ouija movie? Well, who didn't? Hollywood Reporter says that Universal Pictures has announced Ouija 2. It's about a Ouija board that is very dirty.
Is
and needs to be cleaned off. It's called Ouija Squeegee. No, it's not called that at all. But they have announced the cast. Henry Thomas, formerly of E.T.
Oh.
He was Elliot in that film. He will be the star of Ouija 2. And they're looking for an equal return on their first investment. I had no idea. The original picture cost $5 million. That was the budget for Ouija 1. $5 million. It grossed more than $100 million in theaters last year.
That makes it profitable.
It does, indeed. So, Halloween of next year, apparently, is when Ouija 2 will be hitting theaters everywhere.
Is there any chance that the original Ouija film was good, or was it just brilliantly marketed and came out at the right time of year to get people who were in the mood for a scary movie?
There is a chance it was good.
Okay.
I don't know what chance, but there is a chance. And while we're talking Halloween, because, you know, it is that time of year, we're getting close. Halloween Spooks is right around the corner, by the way.
You don't have to tell me, man. I get emails every single day already in mid-September from people complaining we haven't started playing the song yet.
Let's wait for Kevin to get back from vacation because he really enjoys it. So.
I think most of all, yeah.
Yeah. I do want to give you a heads up, ladies. If you go to Yandy.com, that's Yandy.com, those are the folks who sell all the sexy Halloween costumes for the ladies. You know, like the sexy Big Bird. And the sexy Twister game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They've got a new costume. The sexy Donald Trump Halloween costume for the ladies. Ladies, do you want to go as Donald Trump to your next Halloween party, but you want to look extra slutty? Well, the Donna T. Rump Shaker costume will allow you to look vaguely like Donald Trump while still showing off what your mama gave you. It is a white sleeveless collared shirt, a red tie, a blue blazer, and royal blue booty shorts. Amongst the accessories also available, you can get the Make America Great Again trucker cap and a comb-over blonde wig that you can wear to fulfill and complete your Donna T. Rump Shaker costume.
Sit down.
Just the low price of $69.95. If you're looking for something for that party you got coming up.
Can't be a thing.
Yandy.com said they're also trying to market a sexy Carly Fiorina costume, but they just can't manage it.
How dare you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Today's celebrity birthdays. Dodgers legend Tommy Lasorda is 88 years old today. Actor Scott Baio's 55. Bonnie Hunt's 54. Laura Vandervoot. She's 31 years old. And Tatiana Maslany, the brilliantly talented actress from Orphan Black, celebrates her 30th birthday today. I am Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beats.
Yes, you are. And yes, you do. And thank you, Ralph. Tomorrow, we're going to come on back with an all-new Kevin and Bean show. Let me see what's happening tomorrow. Well, our friend Jeff Probst is going to stop by.
Oh, the Probster.
New season of Survivor. Also, I think tomorrow we're going to make some time for people who have had sex in public. Now, you saw the story, Ralph, about the overly amorous couple in the parking lot.
Yes, they were overserved and over-amorous, and they had drunken sex in a parking lot in broad daylight.
Broad daylight
on
in
the
a parking
asphalt.
Lot.
Not in a, oh, not in a car in a parking lot.
No.
On the parking lot.
And
on
their,
the tarp.
Their post-arrest interview is a classic, too, because they don't really feel bad about it, and they're not sure they won't do it again.
Nope.
Which is why I love this. So I think we'll take your calls on that tomorrow. And I think something that came up during What's Good earlier this morning, I think we may have to talk to my wife about how far along these plans are for my funeral.
Yes. And how can I get in on them? I'd like to have something to say.
I mean, I feel like the date is already in her calendar. You know what I mean? Like, she knows more about this than I do. And it was very unnerving to realize that she had given it so much thought. Am I wrong about that, to feel discomfort over this?
Yes,
well, if she
should.
Has a date circled, yes. But I think maybe she's just she's being prepared.
Right.
All right. Well, I think we may need to get her on the line because I think she's got some
I just want to make sure I get a front row seat. That's all I care about.
Because you're going to enjoy that day like no other.
I just want to make sure it's real. It's not some sort of hoax.
You're going to poke the body.
I want a shovel. I want a shovel and I want a front row seat. Those are two
and a mirror to hold over my lips to make sure I'm not breathing for real.
That's right.
Anyway, all that tomorrow right here on a Wednesday Kevin and Bean Show. So come on back, won't you?